This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Take the case of Jimmy Barnes. Jimmy played baseball all afternoon, and he didn't feel like walking home, so he decided to thumb a ride. He'd done it 100 times before, and he didn't think anything was unusual when the driver struck up a friendly conversation. The stranger was a good listener, too. And it only seemed minutes before they pulled up in front of Jimmy's house. When Jimmy got out, the stranger gave him a friendly pat. Then he told him he'd see him again, as he always drove by the park on his way home. The following Saturday, they went fishing together. By now, they were using first names. Ralph said it was more friendly. Jimmy hadn't enjoyed himself so much in a long time. Then during lunch, Ralph showed him some pornographic pictures. Jimmy knew he shouldn't be interested, but, well, he was curious. He bought presents and even gave him money. But payments were expected in return. What Jimmy didn't know was that Ralph was sick, a sickness that was not visible like smallpox, but no less dangerous and contagious, a sickness of the mind. You see, Ralph was a homosexual, a person who demands an intimate relationship with members of their own sex. The decision is always yours, and your whole future may depend on making the right one. So no matter where you meet a stranger, be careful if they are too friendly. One never knows when the homosexual is about. He may appear normal, and it may be too late when you discover he is mentally ill.
It is 22 minutes after the hour of one, and this the month of November in the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, America's new home for family values. Thank you for joining us. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It is Tuesday, November 9th, 2010, and welcome to day 12. If you'd like to be part of the program today, you can do it. It's so easy, a child can take part in this activity. It's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. If you would like to engage with us telephonically, with your comments, questions, clarifications, ponderings, ruminations, kvetches, recipes, whatever it is that you have that you feel needs to be shared with humanity at large, you can do that at 503-505-6964. You can also Skype if you like. That is Rick Emerson Show. That's the username for our Skype account. That is Rick Emerson Show. If you'd like to speak to us from tomorrow or anywhere else on the globe with a clarity that is equal parts, I would say, impressive and astonishing. Let's see. Text box also open. The chat box is open online. You can also go to rickemerson.com for that. You can email if you like. It's Dawn at rickemerson.com. That is Dawn at rickemerson.com or Rick at rickemerson.com. Those are the email addresses. Rick at rickemerson.com or Dawn at rickemerson.com. By the way, Don Taylor, who probably is unworthy of receiving your emails today, or I would say CPR in the future if you need it. You don't throw away the rest of a man's McRib. I don't care if it had been. I don't care if it was next year.
You put it in the fridge, just open on a plate, on Friday, and you saw it eat it over the weekend. You didn't eat it over the weekend.
That's
Monday
the whole
came.
Point.
Didn't
I mean,
eat
that's
it.
That's the entire point. It's in the fridge. It's not like it was sitting outside in the trunk of my car. Also, it doesn't belong to you.
It's hard as a rock and completely inedible and disgusting
well, you
to
know
look
what?
At.
The next time the karmic wheel turns and you end up with my mom, then you can throw my stuff away.
I'll tell you what, if I ever leave a half of an eaten, a half-eaten sandwich on a plate in the fridge for 4.5 days to the point where it becomes like granite and is disgusting to look at, you have my permission to throw it in the trash.
Well, you know what? That's what makes you a different person than me. And the way you can tell that is because there's names to tell us apart. You're Dawn, I'm Rick.
What were you going to do with it?
I was going to heat it up and eat it in a microwave which softens things up. And whether or not you were going to eat it is not, but I wasn't asking you to eat it. I wasn't asking you to consume
it. I'll buy you a new one.
Okay, but there would have been, be that as it may, there would be no need to buy me a new one if you had not. What kind of house were you raised in where you threw away things that belonged to other people?
What kind of house are you raised in that you eat things that have been left open for 5 days and are stale and going bad?
Don't deflect the question. I would not just throw away something that belonged to you, however useless I believe that thing to be, because it ain't my thing.
I would hope that you would care enough about my health and well-being that if you thought I was going to eat a bad sandwich, that you'd get it out of my way before I made a bad mistake in judgment.
I also respect you as an adult and as a free-thinking individual who can, like, you know, keep track of your own stuff. Just for the record, throw my things away.
You're right, though. I should have said, Rick, is it okay if I throw
and then I would
this
have
sandwich
said,
away?
And then I would have said no. And then I would have had half a McRib, which I demonstrably do not have now, less than I want to dig it out of the trash. So
it couldn't be any worse for you
it
if
could.
You do.
Here's the thing. It could be worse. It could also be better. And by better, I mean it could not be in the goddamn trash. Seriously, you know, and this is not going to be a thing where you're going to magically, like, jujitsu it into being, like, my fault for having it in the fridge. I'm going to throw away a thing that belongs to somebody else. That's just rude, Dawn.
So you just leave stuff in the fridge forever, no matter how, like, gross and disgusting and inedible it is?
Was it in the fridge forever, Dawn? Okay. So there you go. The answer was not in the fridge. It was in the fridge for a couple of days, which, by the way, is what the goddamn refrigerator is for. It's for keeping things that would otherwise go bad so you can eat them later. Whether you find it appetizing at this point is immaterial.
It's not some kind of, like, magical, like, suspension device. You still have to wrap them up if you don't want them to go bad.
I don't really know that wrapping it up has the magical properties that you think. First of all, just wrapping something up isn't like it just keeps it good forever. If you're sealing it in some sort of airtight container, maybe. Here's a little trade secret for me to you. Like Saran Wrap aluminum foil, they don't stop things from going bad.
Yes, but they keep...
And it hadn't gone bad anyway.
It
hadn't gone bad regardless. Like, you're making it about a whole separate thing. Whether or not it would have eventually gone bad or gotten moldy or whatever, it was not at that point yet. Also, it doesn't belong to you.
All right.
Throw stuff away belongs to somebody else?
I'm sorry.
For the love of Christ.
I'm sorry.
I'm like 5 feet away.
Your rock-hard, inedible...
You know, there's no need to be passively bitchy about it. I'm, like, right here. When did you throw it away? Was it before I got here today?
No, it was just when I said it, just now.
Which, I was right here. I'm like, across the hall. You can see me, basically, from where you're standing.
I'm sorry. It did not occur to me that you would actually still want the McRib sandwich because it was hard as a rock and disgusting and horrible.
If I didn't want it, why would it still be in there?
Because you haven't gotten around to throwing it away yet.
Well, that's not true. We've had this, and here's the thing. I know you know that isn't the case because we've had this discussion on the show. But I've said that I typically, unless it's just covered with some sort of horrible, creeping, gelatinous alien goo, or some mold that can't be cut away with a knife. I don't throw food away. We've had that discussion more than one time at the program that I eat food that most people consider past its whatever date. And also, like, you can't on the one hand peddle the idea that, well, it's not real food, it's McDonald's, it never goes bad, blah, 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 because there's no real meat in there, and then throw it away because, like, for my alleged health. If you were concerned about my health, you wouldn't have got me the goddamn McRib in the first place.
Well, I'm sorry that I threw it away.
Do we have an understanding about
we have an understanding.
Food in the future?
It will never happen again.
I'm just saying.
You are free to eat all of the disgusting old food that you like.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I will not take offense at your passive attempt to provoke an argument about the nature of the food. I'm just saying.
I'm provoking the argument?
Yes. Yes, you provoked the argument when you threw away my food. That is how you provoked it. If you hadn't done that, we wouldn't be having this argument. Ergo, blah, da da da, QED, da da da. I'm just saying. I'll tell you what, you know, we could poll 100 people right now on two separate issues. One is the food gross? And they might say yes. The other is, you know, like, should you just throw it away since I'm right here? And I think we probably have, I don't know, probably 80% of the people side with you on whether the food is gross. But I think like 100 out of 100 people would say, like, it's not like I was in Kansas or like I couldn't be reached or something. I was in a coma. I don't know. He had an irreversible brain injury. We're not sure if he's going to make it. Maybe I should keep this pizza around. No, throw it away. I was right here.
I've admitted fault, and I apologize, and I've said it will not happen again.
Just said, is this like do you do this at other people's homes? Do you, when you visit somebody, you go for maybe a social event? You say, well, I'm in the medicine cabinet. Maybe I'll look for expired medicines and throw them in the bin.
I was not in someone else's home. In fact, I was in the equivalent of my own home, which I share with you. And to be fair, I admit I should not have done this, but.
I'm just saying.
In my defense, it may have been a reflexive thing because in my home, I'm the one who always has to throw away the old food.
All right. Well, I'm just saying, you and I have different standards for what is old and inedible in the food world.
It simply did not occur to me that at this late date, you were considering it.
It's not that late. It's 1, 2, 3, it's 4 days. You're telling me a sandwich doesn't keep for 4 days in a fridge?
Not if you don't wrap it and it gets stale and so hard that like it could break rocks.
You have no idea how a microwave works. You clearly have never dealt with a stale sandwich before. You know, you microwave a thing and it becomes soft again. I mean, that's the whole, it's because of the process of the water molecules.
It kind of, yes, but it's still really weird and chewy.
Well, I won't offer to share it with you then.
All right, sure.
You're making aesthetic decisions on my behalf. All right, I'm just saying. Sorry, aesthetic. There's a guy who reams on me every time I forget to put the th sound in aesthetic, which I guess is I'm adding that in exchange for taking the th out of Neanderthal or whatever. When did we start pronouncing Neanderthal?
Fairly recently.
Is that like a thing that somebody's doing just because they want to see if we'll do it? Like
maybe.
When God tells Pat Robertson to run for president, like just to see if it'll happen?
Like when they change it to Uranus?
Uranus. No, I say Uranus too because and then it's a British thing so I can get away with it because then it gets me out of it. Because here's the thing. Here's the reason I don't say Uranus. The reason I say Uranus is because it's not because I'm embarrassed by saying Uranus. But it's because you never know if you're in the room with some, that's what she said, jackass,
yes.
Who's going to say it. And then everybody in the room has to, like, or fight down the urge to go smother that guy and feed him his own feet. So I say Uranus to preemptively keep that jackass from going, not Uranus. You know, so I don't do that. I do say pianist, though. It just sort of is like, see, I do that. That's actually the other side of the coin. I say pianist almost as like a dare to people to make some sort of, you know, to chortle at the joke. All right, I'm not going to hold a grudge. I'm just saying. Here's the thing. I just have to say, no. I'm just saying. I am just saying. I don't mean to sound like the guy who's on his like fourth marriage or whatever. But Sarah and I had to go through the same thing. Where she was horrified by some of the food that I would eat or the things that I would leave out. By the way, I'm pretty sure that Sarah, like, stores food just, like, in cupboards at home. Like, she'll just have, like, a plate of, like, spinach and just, like, stick it up with the dishes and just, like, get it the next day. I mean, I haven't seen her do it, but I'm pretty sure. Sarah and I have Sarah has this thing about cooked food, like, let's say, like, pasta, that I have seen her make when we were doing the show that was from like 11 to 3 or whatever, I have seen Sarah go in and make herself like heat up a pasta dish or maybe like a, you know, like maybe to like a TV dinner or something she brought from home, but like heat up a pasta dish at like 10:30, eat it, and then at noon she has to go in and throw it away because it's been sitting on the counter since 10:30. And I'm like, what are you doing? She goes, well, it's been sitting out. I'm like, it's been sitting up for 90 minutes. Not in the sun, in an aluminum. It's been sitting on a plate in the kitchen for 90 minutes. And as far as we know, nobody sneezed on it. Like, what are you? And she's like, no, it's gone bad. And she'll, like, scrape it into the kitchen. And it causes me almost physical pain to see people throw food away. So I'm glad I didn't. I can't even go in the kitchen now. It's like going to the morgue and identifying a dead relative on CSI. I can't even. Is this your McRib? Yes, it is. I said, why? All right, I'm going to move past it. I'm just saying it's a learning curve. I understand.
All right.
All right. Sure. All right. Wait. Okay, I'm past it. Here's what's coming up today. Taser Watch, Geek Watch, top five coming up. We got your top five songs from May 14th, 1983. And you picked this top five because you are partial to these songs.
Yeah, and except, although I believe that there is a song smack in the middle that I don't really care for. That I think I was thinking of a different song.
All right.
But five of the six are songs I actually like.
Well, I mean, you know, look, it's more than you get most time. So, yeah. I mean, you know, all right. Let's see. Just more emails about me stalking Taylor Swift. All right. So we got the Taser Watch, your Geek Watch coming up. Top five, Aaron Duran's Week in Geek, which we did not get to yesterday. A little bit of a situation to deal with on his end. Nothing major. He had like some sort of work deal. So we get to the Week in Geek today. Let's see what else do we have. We want to. By the way, before we do anything else, I just want to say a huge shout out or shouts out ups that are big, demonstrably large ups. To our listener, Andy, good friend Andy, who came in today. Now, Andy was the designer of the Linux pumpkin, the Geek-O-Lantern thing. He was the guy that actually made it. Like, I made a fully functioning Linux computer that is inside this empty gourd shell. So he came in today because he won the Doctor Who 11th Doctor's Sonic Screwdriver. He came in today to pick that up. He was a great guy. He brought you. And he did this thing. It's now become a thing where the more we say no... I think we made this observation yesterday. It's like we're the girl who's playing hard to get or something.
Yeah.
It's like the more we say no, you know, like the more they assume that we just secretly mean yes, which is fine. It works out well, I guess. So he brought you a comedy CD? What is it?
It's a fellow named Chris Lilly who did a show called Summer Heights High that I had talked about on your show. And apparently this is some of some sketch comedy he did previously to Summer Heights High called Big Bite. And he brought me that. So it's kind of awesome.
So he brought you that. And then he also brought me some... This is amazingly
He brought you about
awesome.
Like $30,000 worth of vintage Mad magazines.
It's unbelievable. And I mean, in excellent condition as well. And I said... He goes, I brought you a little something. And, you know, we're like, oh, come on, you know, I mean, you're actually paying to hear the show, which really is, I mean, I was going to say, it's not even just that that's gift enough. It's like way more than really, I mean, it's, you know, swindled you into giving us 32 cents so I can yell about a McRib. I mean, really, that's gift enough. The gift that you will just sit and just tolerate my natterings for a quarter, a nickel and two pennies, sir. I mean, that's really all the gift we need. But he gestures to this. He goes, well, I brought you a little something. And I look over, and it's like he moves out of the way, and I see this big pile of Mad magazines, which is, I mean, it's like a sizable pile. And I said, and I don't even think I said anything. I think I did that little thing where I go like, and I just sort of, like a, you know, almost like a, I'm not trying to poke. I'm just almost kind of a, you know, kind of a, the McRibbis back sort of thing. And I went, you know, where? And he just said, he goes, well, these are my dad's from when my dad was a kid. And he said, no, I don't really need them, you know, dad doesn't have any more, and, you know, and he's like, so I know you're a big fan of Mad Magazine, and I'm like, am I ever? And they're awesome, because they're all from around, like, 1959, 1960, which is really, really hard to find, including, and I was looking right through, including many, many of them that I lost, and I mentioned in this story, but long story short, I had this unscrupulous landlord many years ago that stole an entire crate. Not just of Mad magazines. That it's like everybody has the story about they go off to college and their mom sells their Star Wars things for $5 in a bag out front of the yard. $5, take if want, you know, or whatever. You know, it's like all of your precious Star Wars things just dumped into a paper grab bag that she scrawls a price on, and then some dick takes it from you. I don't have that. I just have this landlord that took this crate of Mad magazines and associated Mad magazine memorabilia, including a letter from William M. Gaines, the publisher of Mad Magazine, that was to me, handwritten. Dear Rick, blah, 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 William M. Gaines, that I had framed. It's okay. I also had a letter from Don Martin. That's okay. Anyway. See, I got lots of things that have been taken and thrown away from me that I get way because the McRib doesn't even make the list. It's like not even in the top billion. Anyway, so that happened years and years ago, but I've been slowly rebuilding my collection, which is difficult, as Manuel would say, is difficult because they're hard to find and they're expensive and it's, you know, and with every passing year, there's fewer and fewer of them around. And, but I've been slowly rebuilding my collection, and he brought this big pile of my magazines, a great number of which, by the way, I do not currently have. So thank you to Andy. So that just means, I mean, it's just... I mean, it's great because not just because it's a cool, rare thing, but also because it's like it's a thing that I legitimately. It is a thing that I'm legitimately kind of into and have been after for quite some time. So anyway, so and also just to everybody again who entered the Geekolander contest. I mean, they were all like really stunning. So the audience is way smarter than we are in almost every way. That's the thing. And it's like I said, well, what do you do? And he's like, well, I take transmissions apart and put them back together. He says, like with a casual wave of his hand, like as though it's a thing that like anybody can do, which it's. I think freaking not. So, all right. Let's see. What else we got coming up today? So we got all of that stuff. We'll talk a bit about Eastbound and Down, the season finale, which aired Sunday, which you finally got a chance to watch. We watched. I watched Dexter last night. Did you watch Conan?
I watched through Seth Rogen.
What'd you think?
I liked it. I thought his energy is good. He's obviously real happy to be back.
Yeah. I mean, I think in a weird way, don't you get the sense that he's glad to be on TBS, that it's a little bit of the... I don't know. And he's almost in a kind of a no-lose situation right now because he doesn't
have to... like you doing this.
Well,
you know, you kind of like, you know...
The master of his own destiny.
Yeah.
Well, and also it's, I mean, actually, and not to compare all things to like, you know, to me or whatever, but it is a little bit like... You know, the being under the KUFO glare as opposed to the AM 970 glare, or running, you know, our kind of our own outfit here. So it is on NBC. You know, you're taking over the Tonight Show slot. I mean, that's like a, you know, there's a huge like cultural weight that you have on there, like a cultural legacy that you're just, you know, you're just picking up that mantle, and that's a lot of stress, especially I think if you're a comic or a comedian,
and
also
a lot of pressure,
so much money on the line,
and a lot of pressure for him to entertain. The mainstream audience,
which
and not
old.
Just his late night audience. Yeah,
that's the other thing. It's like you got to entertain the old and enfeebled people who make up the bulk of the late night audience at this point, of the Tonight Show audience. Whereas the people who have followed him to TBS are really they're the loyalists, and it's you know, and if it works, great, and if not, you know, then everybody, you know, he's still, you know, that he knows he was able to do it on his own terms and his whatever. So he's doing kind of what we are doing, kind of a Sterling Cooper Draper Price sort of a thing.
Yeah.
With fewer boobs, but I mean, you know, look, there's always the future.
So far.
Yeah, I mean, that's just last night. I mean,
there was a masturbating bear.
Well, doesn't there have to be? So, in any event, this is all true. Did you watch, and I know you didn't, but I'm going to ask anyway, because it's what was on TV last night, which apparently, Don, is one of the five things that one is supposed to talk about when one is doing a relatable radio program.
Okay. I'll make a note of that. What are the other four?
I can tell you. Let's see. The five things, and I was told this by a high-priced radio consultant, by the way, who also told me that I was talentless. The five things that you're supposed to talk about. These are the five areas of discussion, sometimes literally, sometimes figuratively. Men and women, about how men be watching sports, women be doing another thing.
We kind of did that yesterday,
yes.
Talking about sex.
Men and women, TV last night, everyday complaints.
Like somebody throwing your sandwich away?
And then this guy, yes, exactly, there's that. Or like, you know, what is up with parking? Work, something that have to do with work, like workplace irritations, you know, the boss man.
Like someone throwing your sandwich away?
Yes, also that you're all of these things. you're everything except what was on TV last night. And there was something else. I forgot the other thing. But it was like his whole thing is like, and Rick, if you talk about these five things, you are going to have a 50 share. You mark my words. Except that won't happen because you're talentless. And then he told the boss to replace me, and it happened. So they, I think it's because he knew I wasn't going to follow the five,
yeah.
And it's because he knew I couldn't only remember. I could only remember four. So I got no idea what the fifth one is, so forth. In any event, so all of that stuff is coming up today. We'll talk about the Dexter, Eastbound and Down, Taser Watch. We got your double Geek Watch. We got a double Geek Watch coming up today. Also your Taser Watch. If we have time, try to get to the Monkey Watch. That's all coming up. So we watched Conan last night. We might as well just get into a little bit of what else we watched last night, and then we'll head on to the rest of the show. There's so much to get through today. I haven't even gotten to the fact that Aaron's wife set a fire in my house yesterday evening. I mean, it wasn't like she set my house on fire. And to be fair, it wasn't like Aaron's wife did it, like, all on her own. I'm looking at you, my wife. There was like this, it's like an actual fire. I mean, you don't have that happen too many times in your life. Where there's an actual fire burning in your kitchen. And I don't mean on the stove, either. I guess I'll just tell this part of the story right now, and then we'll, because this interrupted my TV viewing, which is the other thing we were going to talk about. But, you know, like, Aaron's wife came over last night, because my wife just got back from Turkey, and so one of the things she brought back, and I think it was for, I don't know if it was for her, if it was for Aaron and Jen, or if it was, like, a communal thing, but she brought back, like, one of those damn things, one of those, like, hookah water pipe things that, like, the kids have at the Pied Cow, so you can, like, I don't know, huff spearmint leaves or whatever the hell. Anyway, but she has, like, no idea how to use that, because, like, why would you? Because she's not like Aladdin, so she has the hookah. But I guess Jen and Aaron, they're a hookah using people, and so they came over, or Jen came over, and they're trying to do something. And I didn't know that it would be. Look, it's not like I've ever used one. I figured if you can use a bong though, and I'm not saying that anybody that I know has ever done that, but if you can use a bong, you can probably use a hookah, right? It's basically the same thing, wouldn't you imagine?
I guess I've never used one, so I don't know.
But I mean, wouldn't you? But it looks like it's more or less like there's a thing the stuff sits in, and there's a thing you draw the water out of, and it's a water pipe. Yeah, it's you know what it is? It's like a bong with one of those like an upholstery attachment on it, basically like a hose. So I got stuff to do. So I'm like in the home office. I got my door shut, and I'm and I'm sitting there just typing away and trying to have a fruitful life. Meanwhile, my the wife is just it's like in the kitchen just listening to Dark Side of the Moon or something with Jen while they try to figure out how this like hookah pipe works. And the next thing I know, Philo is like he's doing this like scratching at the door of the office. And the thing is, he doesn't like. Philo does not like anything. He doesn't like it when anything is being cooked, when the stove is on, the oven is on. He doesn't like anything. Whenever you're cooking or there's any sort of flame or smoke in the house, he gets really, really freaked out by it. I know a lot of dogs do that. Max does. Like, Max doesn't get unnerved by most things, but like fireworks and stuff that they say that dogs get freaked out by. And Philo actually doesn't get freaked out on the 4th of July. But he doesn't like it when people are cooking. So if you're if we're cooking something on the stove and there's a lot of steam or a lot of smoke coming off, he will go hide in the office because it's some sort of nature Darwin sort of get away from the flame thing. But he's clawing at the door of the office, and I'm like, all right, I know there's smoke out there. Come on in. And so he sits in the office with me, and about 10 minutes later, I'm like, well, I gotta get me some iced tea or whatever. So I walk out of the kitchen, and they're just busy playing, I don't know, some they're on the Xbox or whatever. They're done with the hookah, and there doesn't appear to be, there's no, the stove isn't on, the oven isn't on, the hookah is cleaned and put away, and yet Philo won't come out of the office, and it does smell a lot like smoke. And I was doing that, and that's a very specific kind of nose/facial expression thing that you do, and it's that, do you smell something burning? And that is the phrase that always follows that combination. Yeah. And I just said, Lara, Jen, is there something burning? And Lara said, I don't think so, unless, and then she just trails off, and she didn't finish the sentence. The next thing I know, though, she's just sort of running into the kitchen. And she lifts. I mean, she went to college. She's gone to college twice. She's now going to college a third time, by the way. She's one of the smartest people I've ever met. What they did when they. Let me ask you this, Dawn. If you had, let's say, for the sake of argument, had a hookah that was filled with, burning things, like embers or leaves or whatever the hell it was they were smoking in the hookah that was, on fire, where would you put that when you were done, if you were getting rid of it?
Where would I get rid of that?
Yeah, you go to the smoking, the burning stuff, and you're done. We're done. We're going to get rid of it now. How do you dispose of that?
You want to put it in an aluminum can, or maybe, I don't know, knock it into the sink if you have a ceramic sink.
Why? Because what's in the sink?
Water.
Where's water? And water does what?
Puts things out.
Yeah. You know what doesn't put it out? Just dumping it into the kitchen trash.
Oh, yeah. No.
Especially when it's, still on fire. And so she takes the lid off. We have the magical motion activated trash can, which is one of the best things we've ever purchased. She takes the lid off and just smoke and flame coming out. And it was just, God knows how long it would have been, sat there and just burned. And it was that metal trash can, so I don't know that it was necessarily going to burn the house down, but it seems like it certainly would have melted the linoleum that was underneath. And if you melt the linoleum, God knows if that catches on fire. I mean, I have no idea.
And they probably would have just gotten gooey.
Yeah, they certainly have no idea. They didn't even... I don't even think they'd put together the whole put it in the trash and everything else is suddenly in flames part of the equation. So then, you know, then I'm looking around and I'm like, oh, God. And I'm like, and it's that whole thing of like, where's the fire extinguisher and have we had it serviced recently? And I, you know, and so I just like, screw this. I'll get some water. So I see a big glass. And then I have to do the whole thing of like, is this water? You know, you're sure. This isn't vodka that I'm about to dump in here. So I put it in. And so now it's the whole thing where we're never, ever, ever going to be able to train Philo out of the being afraid of the smoke thing. Because now this time he was right.
Yeah.
God bless him. It was like Daddy being caught in the well or Timmy being caught like in a mine shaft or something.
He was trying to explain to you. It's like, no, really.
No,
really, something's really on fire.
In the kitchen.
No, Philo, you're afraid of everything.
Seriously.
Well, there's a fire.
Sandy's caught in an underwater tuna net. You know, and it's like so... Anyway, so that was my night. I mean, I didn't even have time to talk about the rest of my goddamn evening. I mean, which was just like a cavalcade of disasters. Like, you don't... It's just a confluence of Aristotelian... Anyway. I'm just going to take a breath. How was your night, Don Taylor?
My night was good. I've been doing that. I've been responding to my emails, by the way, that I have been getting to do personal appearances on other shows and podcasts.
Are you much in demand?
To talk about our program here.
Excellent.
Because I went to a thing on... I did this thing that you're supposed to do. I actually left my house and went to a place where other people, you know, in our business are, and I met them.
Oh, I try to never do that.
I've heard that you're supposed... This networking kind of thing.
I avoid that like the plague.
But I was sitting around on Sunday, actually, and I saw Courtney Hameister mentioned she was going to be on this panel about women in radio at this thing called Siren Nation at the Kennedy School.
Siren Nation.
Yeah, it was this whole sort of conference thing about empowering women to make art. Uh-huh. And there was like a craft show, you know, in the Kennedy School ballroom that was all full of like... completely useless, but really pretty.
Were all the domain names with like Sisters and Sapphos and Lilith?
No,
like they were all
not
taken.
Really, it wasn't really what I saw of it. Was not as like, you know, frou-frou as I thought it was going to be. But anyway, they had a bunch of panel discussions on Sunday, and there was one on women in film, and there was one on women in radio, and there was one in women in something else. Anyway, Courtney Hameister was going to be on this, and April Baer, who is married to Ryan White from The Oregonian, who has been a frequent guest in the show, and I thought, you know, I've always wanted to meet Courtney Hameister, so I thought this would be a good opportunity to meet her.
Have you never met Courtney?
No, I've never met her.
How is that possible?
I don't know. We just have never managed to cross
paths.
That's
really weird. Okay.
And, you know, and I really wanted to meet her. So, of course, what happened was that she was... you ever have that thing where you really want to meet somebody, and then you meet them, and you realize while you're talking to them that they are spectacularly unimpressed with you? While you're trying to make a really good impression?
Almost every day of my
life,
yes.
So that was one of those things where it was like, I don't know why, but I just kept thinking, I'm going to meet Courtney Hameister. She's going to think I'm awesome, and we're going to be best pals. I don't know what I was thinking.
Let's do each other's hair on the weekends.
But it was like, hey, nice to meet you. Hey. And she's had that whole thing of like, I am between panels, and I've got so many things to do, and I don't know you from a hole in the ground, but it's really nice to meet you, and I'm going to be like polite. And I'm just sitting here going, hey.
It's like you're talking to Leona Helmsley.
And that's the thing. I don't think she realized because I met April Baer. She was like, oh, hey. And Ryan was there. And Ryan had their baby. And so I go out in the hall. And April is sitting and talking to Courtney. And Ryan is standing there. And I come over and hang out. And I sit down, too. And I realize now that I think Courtney Hameister, I don't think she knew that I knew Ryan. So I think she might have thought I was just one of those creepy people that just came over and sat next to her. And was just hanging around.
So can you introduce me
leaving?
To Ryan White? Is that marriage? Is it in good shape?
I really wanted to meet you, and now I'm just going to sit here next to you and not leave.
I'm just going to be a creepy girl.
So I don't think that went very well. On the other hand, though, April Baer is awesome.
Well,
and she and I hit it off, and I went and I had lunch with all of them afterwards.
And I should say, by the way, for the record, when I said the Leona Helmsley thing, and in no way is Courtney like that. I mean, she really is like
she's
a charming,
really very nice.
But it's the perception, though, not of her, but it's just when you meet somebody, and it's like you're like, I'm going to put on my best face, and they're going to think I'm funny, and they're going to think I'm smart, and they're going to, and then you open your mouth, and kind of what comes out is like, and they look at you like. Uh-huh. Okay, look, I have to go stand over there and be away from you right now. And you're like, I have failed. And it's like you just feel like whoever it is has just ground you under the heel of their boot, even though they were just going like, okay, well, it's really nice to me. And they were probably, if you looked at it, it's like a Rashomon thing. If you looked at it from a third-person perspective, they were being polite,
right.
But they had, like, places to be, and they didn't really know you.
Yeah.
But in your head, you're like, they hate me.
Oh, yeah. And I've got this whole scenario now in my head because
yeah.
she's on Court and Fat Boy on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And then I do my show, Ham-Fisted Radio, later in the afternoon with Fat Boy.
Awkward.
So I just have this whole thing in my head now where she's going to go on their show on Wednesday, and Bobby's going to go, oh, I heard you met Don Taylor. And she's going to go...
She seems
nice,
interesting,
guess,
isn't she? Yeah, I guess
yeah.
she's,
yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, okay.
But anyway, but I met some people who thought that our stuff going on here was really interesting, including a woman who does a show on OPB and a guy who does a podcast, and both of them separately emailed me and said, would you like to come and talk about this exciting new media project thingy you're doing? And I was like,
I gave you permission to go do that without me.
So last night I was emailing people to go, you know, spread the word.
This is great. You can be sort of like a social flak jacket, where you can just, somebody says like, hey, we'd like to talk to you and have you talk to other radio people, but I can be like Don Taylor, and then just send them right over your way. That's fantastic. It'll be like the, I'll just be like the goalie. Like the puck comes to me and bam, right back out into the court where you can take it and run with it.
But I also had that thing where I was sitting there at lunch with Ryan White, and then there were a couple of the woman who does the show Destination DIY, and she's like this adorable little like manic pixie dream girl with the cool hipster glasses and a little bit of blue in the front of her short hair, and like her boyfriend's name is Levi, and the two of them and Ryan White are talking about some band that they like called Pancake Breakfast.
Just
and I'm sitting here going, I am so old and boring, I have no idea what you're talking
just
about.
Just waiting for Amy Paladino to cast her in a sitcom.
Yeah, and I'm just like, oh yeah, Pancake Breakfast, and they're awesome, and they're this, and I'm just sitting here going,
no,
I don't.
That's why I don't leave
I feel
house.
So uncool.
Can I just tell you what I did last night? This is why I don't go anywhere. I stayed at home last night, and I upgraded my voice recognition software, which already impressed me, by the way. And again, I know it sounds like I'm constantly prodding with this, but it recognizes the word McRib. I found it over the weekend, and I was like, that's really awesome. And so I was like, and I spent actually several hours sort of digging deeper into the voice recognition software because it has a lot of other functions. Like there's a, like you can put these sort of these verbal macros into it where I can just say, you know, response to hate mail. I could use that phrase and it'll say like, you know, dear guy, thanks so much for weighing in. It means a great deal that you took the time to email. Yours forever, you know, in Christ, Rick Emerson, or whatever. You know, or it's like somebody...
Does that automatically do your punctuation, or do you have to say, like, period?
I say my punctuation, which is the way that I want it, because I'm very particular, and I don't want a machine deciding my punctuation for me. I know when I want an ellipsis, and when I want a dash, and when I want an ampersand, and when I want a colon, and when I want a goddamn Oxford comma. You know, so I can put in like a, you know, like if somebody's like, you know, would you like to donate money to, I can put like, you know, I can say charity response and it says, ooh, due to the current economic climate, I'm unable to contribute to your cause at this time. Please don't ever email me again. Also, Rick Emerson's dead. Please stop contacting me. So I did that and, you know, and then I watched, and then I watched Saw 3D, which I mentioned this during Legion of News. Here's a little spoiler for me to you. Not very good. It's bad. It's bad. Boy, is it bad. It's so unbelievably bad. It's bad in ways that haven't even been invented yet, that I'll have to categorize like at some point of the indeterminate future. Boy, it's awful. Boy, it's so awfully. And it's like, you have a friend who writes for some horror site, right?
Yeah, Scott Weinberg.
And it's like, he was a Saw fan, as am I. And
yeah.
Don't get me wrong, it's not like I'm not above cheap frills. I'm really not. I'm above almost nothing. I was going to eat a McRib that was there for like 5 days. I like a lot of the Saw films. Some of them are, you know, the last one was sort of bad, but clearly I was willing to pay to see it. And it's like, you know, and I'm just sitting there going, and it's that thing where you're watching the movie going, okay. And it's, you know, it's like you and I've talked about this. It's like when you, some artist that you've been into for a long time, but you lost track of, puts out a new record and you kind of suspect it's not going to be any good, but then you buy it, you know, or you download it or whatever. And there's the best moment is the moment after you've taken off the cellophane or you've hit play or whatever right before it starts playing, because that's the moment where your expectations are at an all-time and they haven't been dashed yet.
Yeah.
And then you listen to the first song and you go, huh, okay, well, maybe, you know, okay, well, you know, look, nobody bats 1,000. Second song, you go, okay, well, maybe the single is going to be better. This is the one that he released to radio. Maybe this will be a good song. No, that one's not good either. And you realize the entire thing is just, it's bad. And then nobody at any point pulled him aside and said, you're recording a terrible record. You've got to, you're making a huge mistake. So it is with the Saw film. It's like no one, And I don't mean like a studio head or an editor or just like they should have, like, I don't understand why they don't get some guy from Ain't It Cool who has spent money on all of the previous Saw films to come in and to be. That's going to do so much better than like a focus group, which is just like. A focus group is just like, they're just like these human centipedes you get off the street where it's some guy and his idiot friends, and they're all joined together at the hip, and they come in and they sit there because they want to see a free movie, and they give the thumbs up to all the wrong things. They have no idea what they're looking for, what they're talking, and they're half blitzed out of their mind because they found them at the Galleria and just pulled them in to see the I don't know why they don't get some guy who's a fan of the movies to say, what about this is good and what about it is terrible? Because they would have ended up with, I think, a totally different film because everything in this movie is terrible.
But do you think they really, really care? I mean, it's going to make money anyway.
I don't know that that's true. And even if it is going to break even or make some sort of profit, I mean, the thing about the Saw franchise is that, I mean, yeah, it'll make money, I guess. I mean, by the time it goes all around the world and it goes on DVD and whatever. But as we all know, that's not the point with companies now. The company's point now is to see how much more money it will make than the last one. Because that was the thing that started with Friday the 13th, where the sequels actually outperformed the previous films. And if you look at the Saw franchise, there's a thing that happens in sequels where every movie makes less money than the one before it. And it's like, as soon as it loses money, that's when you stop. All the Saw films outgrossed their predecessors. This movie is not going to outgross anything. It's awful. It's so relentlessly, jaw-droppingly bad. That it became like an endurance test of just like, can I make it all the way through this just so I can be done with this goddamn movie franchise, and not have to watch anymore. You, on the other hand, as I was suffering through Saw 3D, and yes. By the way, even the 3D, here's what I can say about the 3D in Saw 3D. If you really, really desire an experience that simulates being hit in the face with somebody else's intestines, you know, I mean, hey, you got that covered. I mean, your $12 or whatever is going to get, you'll be able to say, hey, I did that. And in surround sound, I heard like a going from left to right. End. That's it. There's nothing else that can recommend that movie. You, on the other hand, the opposite end of the spectrum. You were watching one of the best 3D films ever made and one of the best films of the last year, which was?
Piranha.
Which is awesome.
Piranha 3D, which I actually watched. I didn't know if it would be any good, so I watched about 10 minutes of it just by myself. And it has one of the most wonderful homage-filled opening sequences to a horror film
with Richard
ever.
Dreyfuss.
And who's sitting in this boat wearing the little fisherman's cap and singing the damn song that he's singing on the boat.
Show me the way to go home.
With Scheider and Shaw. And it's awesome. And so I watched about 10 minutes of that and I was like, okay, I'm gonna save the rest of this and watch it with Patrick.
Oh, was this a private screening?
Yes.
Okay.
But no, it's that thing where, you know what it's... I don't know how it is in your home with watching things, but you have the thing of like you can't watch that by yourself. You have to save for me. We have to watch it together.
Yeah.
And so there's, we end up with this thing all the time. Like I can't, even though my husband goes gaming on Thursday, I can't watch Fringe when he's not there because we watch Fringe together. So with Piranha, I didn't even tell him that I was watching it because I didn't want to,
you didn't want to wait.
And I thought, I'll give it. It will probably not be as good as people said, so I'll just watch it, and then I'll tell him later, it wasn't that
good.
But
then you got like 10 minutes in, you're like, oh my God, he has to see this.
Yes. And so then we got together, and I started it back from the beginning, and we watched all the way through, and it's just genius.
It's great.
And it becomes so insanely gory.
Yeah.
Beyond anything that you could have imagined gory. It is so gleefully... But it's also... The acting is really excellent. Elizabeth Shue is in it.
And it's a beautiful-looking film.
For God's sake.
And the production design, it's a great-looking film.
Yeah.
I mean, they're great locations, but that's only half the battle. It's filming it and knowing how to frame it. It sounds dumb talking about Piranha 3D, but it's a beautiful-looking movie.
And I have to admit, I did not actually see it in 3D, but you can see particularly the special process shots and that sort of thing. The set pieces that are designed to take advantage of 3D
are spectacular.
Are just amazingly clever.
Yeah.
And really smart. That whole sequence with the two women swimming naked under the water with the classical music,
which they know is ridiculous.
Yeah, and it is ridiculous, but you can tell from the process shot that was all really spectacular 3D. And
it is. It's quite a film. I have recommended Piranha 3D to people, and they go, yeah, whatever. And I'm like, no. It's really, as I said the other day.
It's a good movie.
It is exactly what we all wanted Snakes on a Plane to be.
Yeah.
I mean, it is just a fun, It is a fun, you know, and people, you know, that stupid thing where people say, like, it's a popcorn movie or it's a summer film, which is usually just an excuse for a thing to be bad. That's an excuse to have lowered expectations.
Yeah.
I'm going to see Transformers 3. It's just a popcorn movie. You know, that's just where, like, you, that's where you don't have to admit to yourself that you are a fool. Piranha 3DO is a great summer fun horror film. And it really, I can't recommend it strongly enough. Can I just tell you this? And I'm saying this is not a spoiler because it's like you have to see it. The best kill in that entire movie is the one with the propeller and the hair.
Yeah.
I saw that and I was like, you know, did you ever do
Although seeing Eli Roth get like cut in half is kind of awesome.
Have you ever seen a movie though where it's like you, where they do one of the kills or they do like a shock or a surprise? And it is the whole thing of, like, you scream, and then you laugh at the recognition that they just got you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, it is the skill of the filmmaker who just screwed you with
and
something.
And there are several of those in that movie where you're watching it, and then you just go, ah!
Yeah.
And then it's kind of funny because of the way they do it is, it's funny in its horribleness.
How great is Christopher Lloyd?
Christopher Lloyd is terrific.
He's like...
Jerry O'Connell is even good. He's playing...
Playing the type.
Basically playing Joe Francis.
Yeah.
You know, and doing a damn good job of it.
It's a great film, and also
I haven't had this much fun watching a horror film. I don't think since the first time I saw Lake Placid.
I would agree with you there. It is very much in that. If you like to Lake Placid, and by the way, confidential to perhaps enthusiasts of erotica, Randy, formerly of Vegas, I'm looking at you. Now, the Rick Emerson Show does not offer personal service. Adult film actress Gianna Michaels actually makes an appearance in Piranha 3D.
My husband's like, wait a minute, I think she's from porn.
That's like, weird. At least he said that and didn't
knew.
Go. At least he didn't do the slow reveal. I know her from somewhere. She looks familiar. Wait, oh, now I know. She's a porn actress from Salem, of all places.
Oh.
She's actually a porn actress from here. She's the chick who paraglides, and then she comes out of the water. But they do that scene of, like, where her bosoms are dangling into the water, and you know it's, you know, it's like, that's a thing where when they were making a 3D film, they're like, we gotta get a chick with huge cans so we can just dangle them at the 3D lens, which they do to excellent effect, by the way. So I'm just saying. Well, I'm glad you watched that because I was actually going to make the hard sell, but it's like you only have so many hard sells, you know. In any relationship, there's only so many times you can say, "Look, I know against your better judgment, I want you to watch this movie. I know you don't want to watch it, but you should." And then sometimes that works out, but it's like you only get like two failures of that before you can't ask them to watch anything else.
Speaking of which, have you watched The 5,000 Figures of Dr. T? Yet?
I got it. I just haven't watched it. I haven't watched Bride of Frankenstein either, so I don't know. What are you going to do? All right. Well, in any of it, it is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. The Rick Emerson Radio Program brought to you by Castalia Language Center. You can find out more about them at PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. It is the website for Castalia Language Center where you can learn to speak Spanish the way that, the way you learn to speak any language efficiently, fluently, conversationally. That is by using it in, yes, conversations. You're actually using it the way you would in day-to-day, everyday life. I'll put it this way. It's like the next time you're in, you know, Sevilla or Valencia or whatever, and you see that Michael Jackson latex mask on the wall, you don't want to have to, you know, feel like you're at a disadvantage in the haggling process, right? You know, it's like my wife was sort of able to pull it off. She was able to talk the guy down a little bit because she kind of speaks Spanish. But it's, how much cheaper would that Michael Jackson mask that she purchased for me have been if she'd been able to just sort of, you know, speak in a very loquacious manner? The answer is probably 20% less. So you go to PortlandSpanish.com. You find out about Castalia Language Center, where they offer Spanish language classes and lessons specifically for adults, which means you're not going to be surrounded by kids or teenagers. Not that that's a problem in and of itself for most people, but they just learn differently, and you learn at a different and a slower rate when you are an adult.
Because your brain is just, you know, all old and used up.
And full of porn and piranha facts.
Right.
You know, and there's no room for prepositions there sometimes, so you got to, like, clean things out. And also they're not going to do the thing you did in high school or college where you're in a class of, like, 50 people. You're in, like, a big, arena, basically, you know, in the enormo dome of education trying to, you know, get the teacher's attention. You're, like, one of 70 students. There's only 7 other students at any given time, sometimes fewer. It means you're going to get near individual attention. So find out more about Castalia Language Center by going to PortlandSpanish.com, and please tell me you heard it right here on the Rick Emerson Show on the Emerson News Network.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Awesome.
A grandmother in Abilene, Texas, is concerned about a gateway drug that's being peddled at a local skating rink.
Are kids calling it butt hash?
No.
Oh. Are kids calling it, I got nothing.
Sarasota first heard of this potential menace from her 11-year-old granddaughter, who goes skating at the Skatin' Place in Abilene every weekend.
Are there apostrophes with that N?
No, there's no apostrophe. It's just Skatin'.
Is it one word or three words?
The Skatin' Place.
All right.
Anyway, so she heard about the
thing. Oh, this is Skating One.
Yes.
We enjoy her, you know, skating and having a good time, but then... This is the first time she's ever come home and said, we had pickle juice shots.
We had what?
Pickle juice shots.
Okay.
Soda's concerned that the idea of pickle shots could be giving kids the wrong idea of how they should party.
They see TV. They see, you know, the advertisement of liquor, beer, whatever. To me, that's the concept that I'm getting, you know, the start of it.
Of liquor beer.
Liquor beer.
Oh, okay.
What it is the snack bar at the Skatin' Place. One of the things they offer are little plastic cups of pickle juice. And for 50 cents, you can buy a shot of pickle juice.
If you're my mom.
And they call them pickle shots. Jeff Groban has owned the Skatin' Place for 15 years. And he says so far he hasn't heard any complaints from kids or parents.
I have no idea where that came from, or I wouldn't even suggest that. This is a roller skating rink. We sell sodas and any kind of drinks, and a pickle shot's just kind of a good way of saying to get a drink of pickle juice.
There.
Good
way of drinking pickle juice.
Yeah, sure.
He continues here.
What we're doing here is family oriented, so I don't see any problem with having pickle juice for sale.
Well, who does? So the pickle shot is a good way of getting your pickle juice, as opposed
right.
to like you know, having to go to the pickle hose out back, or go visit the pickle distillery, or have the pickle fairy come visit you at night,
or squeezing the pickles directly into your mouth.
You don't. Yes.
Soto agrees there's nothing wrong with selling pickle juice, but she offered some more kid-friendly ideas for packaging.
Sell them the juice in a bottle. Sell the juice in a ice cup, a cup full of ice. You know, that's different.
What is the, for the love of God, I don't understand. What is the problem here? What is the, I'm not trying to be deliberately obtuse. What is the issue here with the pickle juice?
I think the woman is concerned that kids are doing shots of
something.
Oh,
it's a shot. Okay, so it's not. So this isn't some like maraschino cherry thing where she's saying that like it's gone fermented.
No, she just thinks that kids shouldn't be doing shots.
So they shouldn't have things in tiny glasses, basically,
right.
is her whole thing. The glasses ought to be large, not small.
Yeah, because apparently once you get kids doing shots of pickle juice, it's just a short trip to tequila.
Okay.
I guess,
parents need to be aware that kids are calling it by the more popular slang term, butt hash.
All right, there you go. So everything needs to be in the large glass, and that will okay. All right.
Yeah.
This is sort of like the I was going to say it's not even like candy cigarettes because the pickle juice isn't even meant to really represent anything. Right, it's not meant to stand in for anything. You know what this is for? This is just for teenage boys who like to impress each other by consuming large amounts of horrible or off-putting things.
I think it's also, you know what it is? It's a guy who owns a snack bar and he has pickles and they had these big jars full of juice. And so he said, you know, I'll bet I could sell this for 50 cents. And so he did, and kids being kids and not having much money, and it being kind of funny and weird, they're like, let's do shots of pickle juice.
Well, because kids also like things that horrify adults.
Yeah.
Which is why they eat, like, that candy that looks like a booger, or, you know, or whatever. That, like, nose candy that looks like snot.
Yeah.
You know, because when you're a kid, you're like, hey, look at this. And you're just, like, sucking, you know, candy snot out of something because it's like, you don't care.
Yeah.
You don't really become weirded out by those things until you're an adult for some reason.
And you also just think the weirdest things are cool when you're a kid. I could see hanging out at the skating rink and thinking it's cool that our skating rink snack bar had pickle juice shots
especially
when I'm like 10 years old.
And if you're growing up in like, I don't know, Kickwaddle, Georgia or whatever the hell it is. So, all right, well, there you go. So pickle juice, that's the thing the kids are into these days, apparently. All right.
Let's do our Geek Watch.
Here's your, is this the double?
Is it a double?
Yes, it is. Those are two stories on the same page, are they
okay.
not?
Okay, yes,
now,
it
here's
is.
The thing, and those are two related stories.
All right.
And we want to thank listener John, who submitted this. So this is a double Geek Watch. I just got it, and I apologize in advance I guess maybe it's not technically in advance because it was going to be at the beginning of the show. I was going to actually start the show with something that was appropriate to this watch, but I didn't really have time to put it together, so I'll do it tomorrow. So tomorrow we'll open the show with something that is related to this. Here's your... And it's because it's here's the thing, is it's a double geek watch, and it's like half of it is also a snuff watch. But we'll just do it as a geek watch. But here's your double geek watch for Tuesday from listener John.
Ugh, this high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember, you used to...
Just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen.
There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship.
Ship.
You got it?
Energize.
And by the way, as I mentioned before the show started today, I did you the, as Jack Rebney would say, I did you the kindness of going through and removing as many Japanese words, names, places, things, nouns as I possibly could.
Thank you.
Some that could not be removed. Like, for example, the guy in the second story, he actually changed his last name to that because his original last name was too difficult to pronounce.
Ah.
So he chose that new last name. All right, here's your double geek watch. Here's Don Taylor.
The Japanese government announced on Wednesday that it will award Leiji Matsumoto, the creator of space pirate Captain Harlock, space battleship Yamato, and other classic manga and anime, with the Order of the Rising Sun. The Japanese government also announced last week that manga creator Shigeru Mizuki and actress Sayuri Yoshinaga, who did Taro the Dragon Boy, are among 17 people honored as persons of cultural merit this
Look
year.
At you. And you made it all the way through that. Well done, Don Taylor.
Thank
I don't
you.
Even want to know if you practiced. I'm going to choose to think that that was just like a first time out of the
How
gate.
Could
you
I practice?
Nailed it.
I just picked it. I had
Hot off
read
the presses. It was just handed to you almost.
I was reading that cold.
Is the second guy they mentioned, maybe it's better to put it this way, the second name from the end of the story.
Okay, yeah.
Mizaka?
Mizuki.
Is that the Howl's Moving Castle?
No.
Guy?
No.
Who am I thinking of then?
You're thinking Miyazaki.
Miyazaki. Okay, so here I'm an idiot Western, and you know the names all sound the same to me.
Space Battleship Yamato, I don't know if it ever got released. I saw some great footage recently. I'm sure somebody in the text box, probably Thomas
talking
Gill
about the
or
new theatrical release.
Yes.
It came out last year.
Did it come out?
It is which I just discovered, and I'm not going to pretend like I knew that in advance. I found that
the
out
trailer
as
trailer for that looked so awesome.
As a result of this story, because John sent this to me, and he sent me the two stories. Because I'll tell you, both these stories, they are both Yamato-related or Star Blazers-related. And he's like, hey, I got these two stories about Yamato, one good, one bad, you know, one happy, one sad. And he said, and also check this out. And then he linked to the official site for the Yamato movie, the live-action film, which I do believe was released in Japan last year. But to the best of my knowledge, and I could be wrong about this, from what I was able to find, it has not been released in, like, a dubbed version or even a subtitled version. I think the only version that currently exists is, like, still just in, like, flat-out Japanese. Okay. So I'm kind of screwed on that front. I got to wait.
Yeah, but if you you listeners have not seen the trailer for Space Battleship Yamato.
It's awesome.
It is so amazing.
We linked to it when it first came out, which seems like a couple years ago now, and it gave me chills every time I watched it, especially because they're smart enough to go with the classic orchestral use of the Yamato theme, which is just which, by the way, can I just tell you this? As the guy, and I own like 5 discs worth of Yamato soundtrack music because it's all awesome. It's spectacular. So we're going to play some of that tomorrow. I don't have to do it today, but we'll play some of that tomorrow.
All right, the sad part of the news. The Coast Guard at the Ogasawara Islands report that space battleship Yamato producer Yoshinobu Nishizaki passed away due to a fall from a boat at around 12:35 p.m. on Sunday. He was 75. Nishizaki had fallen from the center starboard section of the 485-ton research steamboat Yamato, which was anchored at Futami Harbor. After a friend sent out a distress call at around 12:45 p.m., the Coast Guard surveillance boat Southern Cross brought Nishizaki to a sick bay about 10 minutes later. He was then rushed to a clinic by ambulance, but was pronounced dead at 2:58 p.m. Nishizaki established a company to produce music and visual works in 1972, and he then produced the Space Battleship Yamato television anime series in 1974. That space opera story launched a franchise that continued with several television series and a string of hit films.
It really is just, and it's just a fantastic series. If you watch all... So I guess there were actually 3 seasons or series, depending on what part of the world you're in, that aired on Japanese television. And then there was like endless, like theatrical spinoffs and made-for-TV movies of varying quality. And I've probably only seen like half the Yamato stuff that exists, but it really, really is great. And it's one of those things, and it's a kind of a cultural hiccup that I think... I think it was like the right place at the right time with the right dash of adult ignorance. Because when I was a child, when I was growing up, I was able to watch Star Blazers, which is the American, the Western name for Space Battleship Yamato, because it aired on Seattle Television Channel 11, which was KSTW, which they had in my hometown of Kennewick. And they aired it at 7:30 every weekday because I think the people at the television station had never actually watched the show. I think that they were just like looking through a catalog of like crap we can fill our airtime with. And they went, well, we got like $9 left and we got this half an hour to fill on weekdays. We can't afford Romper Room. Newsroom Review, no. Electric Company, no. Zoom, no. You know, whatever. And it's like, what's this? I don't know. Yamato Battle, I don't know. It's something. It's a cartoon. How much is it? $4. Okay, let's air it. And they just, I think they must have just assumed that because it was a cartoon, and this is back in the 70s, because it was a cartoon, it was for children, which it was not. It was a primetime television series in Japan meant for probably not even family audience, probably meant for adults. But I think Americans at that time didn't know the concept of how animation was viewed in the rest of the world. It just like, you know, comic books is still viewed as a kid thing to many people. And they went, it must be for kids. It's a cartoon. Look, there's a happy little space robot. Never realizing just how serious and great and dark and wonderful that show was. And it is, I think, an accident that it really got on the air. And it was just such a great show.
Either,
beautiful.
Either I just was not in a place where it crossed my cultural radar, or they never showed it in the Los Angeles area.
It's a regional thing, I think.
But my husband is from the Northwest here. And yeah, when I showed him the trailer for Space Battleship Yamato, I was like, oh, you got to see this. This is like great. And he looked at it and he watched it for a couple minutes and he said, wait a minute, is this Star Blazers?
Yeah.
And I said, I don't know what that is. He goes, Star Blazers?
Come on!
Come on, yeah. I don't know what that is.
I have told you, I will tell you this, that I've talked to people. I've been in other places in the United States where nobody will know it, but then there'll be somebody else there from, like, Washington. They'll go, oh, yeah, Star Blazers, I know that. So it is, I think, a thing that is maybe not solely in the Northwest, but I think is to some degree was a Northwest phenomenon because that Seattle station, again, we were fortunate because this is back before cable, really. And so stations, you know, they would have these affiliate relationships where you would just, like, you didn't have your own stuff to carry in your city, so you would just pick up crap from another place. And for everybody in Washington, it was like, well, we'll just pick up this Seattle station. And so this one Seattle station fed programming to, like, half of the cities in Washington. And it was a really great, really wonderful layered tech. First of all, it was the first episodic thing that I had ever seen, the first serialized drama, because the premise of, and I won't belabor the point, because if you saw it, you know, and if you don't, it's, you know, it doesn't really matter probably. But the premise of the show was, for the first season anyway, was that they had 365 days to get to this other planet. Because everybody on Earth was dying of radiation sickness because Earth was filled with radiation. Everybody was dying and they had to live underground to get away from the radiation on the surface. They had to get to the other end of the universe or the solar system or whatever to get some remedy from planet Iskandar. And then they had to get back within 365 days, which was – and so they would end every episode with the announcer going, can the Star Force make it back in time? There are now only 215 days left before everyone on Earth will perish. And then they go to the credits, and I'm like seven, going like, what, Christ, you know? And my mom is like, you got out of school? I'm like, Mom, you don't understand, man. And it was just, and characters were killed. There was, you would see, it wasn't like the ship exploded, and then like, it was a comic death where like, the guy showed up later, oh, I ducked out at the last minute. Like, the ship exploded, people died. And there was something I did not recognize when I was a child, but with adult eyes, recognized as, not shown, it didn't even actually happen, but an implied near gang rape at one moment where some guys decide when they get to Iskandar, they figure everybody on Earth is already dead. What's the point of going back? Us nine guys and this one woman will stay behind and we'll start another planet. You know, we'll start civilization again. And as they're saying like that, we'll start civilization again. Like you see some guys like literally like holding her down. And it's like, so I don't think I don't think the Seattle folk really realized what they were airing. Now it was not all that dark, but it introduced me to, I think, a level of sophistication in science fiction that at that young age I hadn't really, you know. So that show made a huge impact on a lot of people. And I think probably a lot of American interest in manga and Japanese animation can be traced to that guy. So anyway, so there you go. So farewell, that guy. What is his last name?
Nishizaki.
So, you know, anyway, so that's, if I were Japanese, I could say something probably really stirring about honor and legacy and family and dignity and, you know, and you shall be enshrined in the hall of heroes and something or other. But anyway, so on behalf of all of us nerds and dorks, so thank you for creating such a fantastic show. There's your Double Geek Watch for Tuesday.
By Grafthar's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next.
Ooh, loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
All right, here's Don Taylor.
Lady Gaga is now the subject of a university-level course. Lady Gaga and the Sociology of the Fame.
Is that her new book where she has to fight Snape and...
Yes, okay. It is. And whales,
yeah.
With laser eyes. It's an upper-level sociology course being taught starting in January by USC sociology professor Dr. Matthew DeFlem.
DeFlem?
DeFlem. DeFlem.
Okay.
DeFlem.
Uh-huh.
Who says the... He probably said, no, it's DeFlem. Who says the course is about sociology and fame, not just the singer herself.
Being the better fan will not make you the better student at all. It's just a sociology course.
Okay.
DeFlem says this course isn't just for the casual fam.
The worst superhero name ever.
There's going to be serious readings in sociology of culture and so on, and there's going to be quite a serious amount
of
work.
Is this Sacha Cohen?
And I am so French.
Yeah. I mean, is he French?
I am choking on my own tongue.
Is that where this is from?
I don't know. His name is Matthew, M-A-T-H-I-E-U.
Oh, that
Matthew,
sounds French.
Matthew DeFlem.
Yeah, all right.
DeFlem says he's already got a full class for the
semester.
Sounded
like Hervé Villechaize just there.
Enrolling of courses has just begun yesterday, and I've just quickly looked. Most courses have about, let's say, 5 students signed up or 7 students signed up. My course is completely full.
Well, all right. Well, la-di-da, Mr. Flem.
The Flem.
All right. Whose last name is the Flem, and then just decides to stick with that? And he must be French though, because he's obviously just a real dick about it too. Like, I'm not going to change my name. You change the way you read it. All right. So forth. All right. Here is. It's like my. You know, I got to tell you, one of my dad's best friends. His last name was spelled D-E-A-T-H, and he just pronounced it Deeth. He insisted that you had to pronounce it Deeth, and it was like if my name was Mr. Death. You know,
yeah.
And his name and his first name, he had like a cool biblical name, too. It was like Zachariah or something. My name is Zachariah Death. I would totally be like, I'd wear a shirt with my name on, like, hello, my name is Zachariah Death, just all the time. But he would be like, it's Deeth. And it was like, even as a kid, I'm like, why you gotta run from yourself like that? Why can't you just, you know, it's like they always tell women, own your body. I always wanted to, like, Zachariah Death, own your name.
I had this thing with my first husband. We talked about how we'd like to, we considered briefly changing our name legally to, basically it'd be spelled Monster Robot, but then tell people that it's actually French and it's pronounced Monster Robot.
See, that would be awesome.
But everywhere, you know, you have to give them the name of the doctor, something, go, Mr. Monster Robot, or someone has to say it out loud.
There was there's a great, have you read Freakonomics?
No.
You really ought to read Freakonomics at some point. It's a fascinating book. I won't belabor it, but I will just say that it's one of the, it's a book that where they take your, they, you feel at the end as though they have taken your brain apart, polished everything, and then put it back together like in a slightly more efficient way. And you look at things, it is not an exaggeration to say that I look at things, I look at all things in my life through a slightly different prism than I did before I read that book. It has changed the way that I view the world. But there's actually a great section where they talk about the prevalence of certain names in certain social strata, you know, and not just sort of like ethnic or religious, but also like in terms of financial strata. What names are popular with what economic groups throughout the 20th century. So like in the 50s, you know, rich people named their kids this, but poor people were naming their kids this. And then and what they essentially show is that names that are created by or brought into popularity by rich folk about 15 years later show up in middle class communities and about 10 years later in poor communities, by which time, of course, no one in the rich community wants to be associated with them anymore. But they also they have a little sidebar about people who do the thing of like naming the kid one thing, but pronouncing the kid another, including from Los Angeles. And they had this great thing where they had access to all the birth records. Los Angeles, some parents who I swear to God, named, and it's a thing that, like, if they didn't have the thing in front of you, you would think that it was like a Snopes deal, where they named their twin sons Lemon Jello and Orange Jello, and then they insisted it was Lemangelo and Orangelo. that incidentally, that is followed up by the story of a that is followed up by the true story of a woman who named her daughter, and this, I'm going to spell the first name for you, The daughter's first name is spelled S-H-I-T-H-E-A-D, and the daughter's name is Shatid. So there you go. Shatid. Let's do one more. We'll take a little pee break for everyone, since people are now typing the phrase pee break over and over and over again in the text box. And then we'll come back.
I mean, it's been a while.
I got nowhere to be, but, you know, I know that people got bladders and stuff.
That's true. Greg and Sarah had already been here. We can go long today if we want to.
Stay until noon if we wanted to.
We'll make them all just cross their legs and suffer through it.
That's right. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Keith Olbermann has issued an apology to his fans, but not his bosses, for causing anxiety and unnecessary drama by failing to disclose campaign contributions to three Democratic candidates. In an open letter obtained by the New York Times, Olbermann thanks fans for their ground-rattling support and owns up to mistakenly violating an inconsistently applied rule, which I previously knew nothing about. The Countdown frontman was suspended without pay last week after Politico revealed that he had run afoul of NBC policy by donating $2,400 each to the campaigns of Kentucky Senate candidate John Conway and Arizona Representatives Paul Grijalva and Gabriel Giffords.
You know what's weird is that NBC themselves donates to political candidates. That's the thing that doesn't make any sense about it, is that NBC, the network, actually donates money to political causes and to candidates.
Yeah, and that's basically... That was, and like he said, you know, an inconsistently applied policy that I did not know about. So he was only suspended for 2 days. He's going to return to primetime television tonight.
I believe. But you know, here's the thing though, is that he's I don't know if this is related to his suspension or not, but you know, he's discontinuing the best thing about his show, which is that worst person in the world segment, which sucks.
I loved that part.
I mean, he's like, his Jon Stewart made me see the light about it, the divisive media and the whatever. I mean, it's like, as though that aspect of his show is going to change at all, which it probably will not.
Apparently, though, he's using his clout, though, there as well, because a source told Pop Matters or something like that, that he's furious about the way this has been handled, and he's insisted that MSNBC apologize to him. And he's demanding that the rules be changed.
Good for him.
NBC.
No, look, it's the point of having power if you can't wield it against those who annoy you. Yeah. I mean, seriously, that's the only reason to have power, is to use it. I mean, because otherwise it's like, you know, otherwise it's like a McRib left alone in the refrigerator that can't be eaten. Oh, wait, I meant to say trash, left in the trash. So good for him. I'm all for it. Here's the thing about Keith Olbermann. I am about him the way that I'm about Bill Maher. Don't watch him. He irritates me, like, when I do watch him. Like, if I have more than 5 minutes, I go, like, I can't stand this guy. And that has nothing to do with his beliefs. He's just, he's just so strident. And I know this sounds hard to believe, but when I'm not here, I don't really like to watch things that just make me irritated or annoyed. I try to have a fairly low-key existence when I'm not doing this. And so that guy, he just raises my blood pressure, but I'm glad he's there doing it, is my thing.
When I was a young person in Southern California, he was a sports guy in L.A. And dear God, he was annoying.
Oh, yeah.
Dear God, he was just pompous and annoying.
Oh, and a jackass. Well, he's been suspended before. He got to – I'm almost certain that this is – that I'm thinking of him and not Kilbourne. But then again, having said that, it might be Kilbourne. But, you know, he and Kilbourne, you know, when they were the SportsCenter guys and the models for the Sports Night guys that Sorkin created. And I think it was Kilbourne. It may have been I think it was Olbermann. It may have been Kilbourne. But one of them got suspended for making, I mean, really, even by my standards, like exceptionally crude workplace comments about a female coworker of theirs. Which, I mean, even if you accept the fact that working at SportsCenter is sort of a boys, you know, locker room kind of a thing. I mean, it was really just like beyond the pale. He apparently has always just been a massive raging dick. But who cares? I mean, that's kind of his deal. I mean, that is his bailiwick. He is there to be like the raging a-hole. So, I mean, you know, God love you. And I got to tell you, if I had the opportunity to have sexual relations with Keith Olbermann, I would take that opportunity.
Would you?
Well, maybe not.
You find him appealing in a manly kind of a way?
Maybe it's overstating it to say that. I don't really know that I would.
He's a huge head.
I think Robert Plant, yes. Because, I mean, it's like, you know, he's Robert Plant. Probably not. But I will tell you this, that if I was a chick, I would find Keith Olbermann exceptionally that's probably the better way to put it. That I look at Keith Olbermann and I think the same thing that I think about, like, George Clooney or John Hamm or maybe Don Draper. But George Clooney, where you look at him and you go, like, he is a certain kind of old school, you know, kind of like intelligent and sophisticated, yet at the same time kind of rugged and sort of, you know, rough around the edges kind
of
guy.
Is it one of those things where you find him hot in that sense that he is kind of what you would be if you had the option?
Yes. It's a bromance, as I believe the kids call it.
It's not necessarily the sort of person you would choose to date, but sort of that because...
Yeah, well, it's like... it's
Because I have ladies like that I see and I go, you know, if I had the option, if I could just, like, shift into another body, that's the body I would take.
That's probably the better way to put it. I don't know that I would have relations with him like as me now. I'm saying that probably... I would imagine he doesn't spend a lot of nights alone, I'll put it that way. I don't know what his personal life is, but I mean, I would imagine it's busy. He really is one of those guys that you look at and he has so many of the cool old school traits, but at the same time, he has the modern sensibility and he has the sort of like rakish edge to him and the whatever. And he's like a fiendishly smart guy and again, kind of a raging dick. But he sort of gets away with it because he has such a massive intellect. And here's the other great thing about Keith Olbermann. Because here's the thing. Let's just be honest. Because Democrats are like progressives or liberals, whatever you're supposed to call them, the liberals are just such pussies. All of them. They're just such huge pussies. So the exceptions to that rule kind of stand out. It's the reason why Rush Limbaugh stands out, because conservatives aren't funny. I don't care what like the guy in the Capitol Steps comedy troupe tries to tell you. Yeah. Conservatives aren't funny, which is why Rush Limbaugh was such a huge revelation, because he's a Republican, he's a conservative who's hilarious or was hilarious at a certain time.
Mallard Fillmore, case in point.
That's exactly what I'm talking about right there. So I mean, you know, and liberals just don't tend to have a lot of alpha traits to them. So when you get a guy that does, like Keith Olbermann, he really stands apart from the pack. Bill Maher's a little bit of the same way, and he has a little more of that like sleazy Lothario thing going on. But I mean, it's the same thing where Bill Maher, you know, he doesn't take a lot of crap from people. And so I think it is easy for him to distinguish himself in that field. All right. We should take a break.
Okay.
Everyone pee right now, wherever you are.
Go to a bathroom, nearby bathroom.
If you're going to be all upper crust about it, I suppose.
Well, if they're just going to pee where they're sitting, they could have done it, you know, without us taking a break, frankly.
If you're going to be all West Egg about your urination, then sure.
You had to bring urine back into the show, didn't you?
I myself, just going to go Rupert style right here. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We're back after this. We got your top five still to get to. We got your Taser Watch and more, plus the Week in Geek with Mr. Aaron Duran. That is all on the way. You stay right there. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
By the way, just if you have not ever seen Star Blazers, we were talking about that earlier, if you have not seen the American port over, which was just, you know, which is dubbed of Star Blazers, although I do believe it's available, it's subtitled now, which I guess is so you can get the nuance of the voice acting or the whatever. Those are all available. In fact, I think you get a box set of it online now, and it contains a fourth season or something that was actually never shown here in America. I strongly recommend watching that. I had this whole thing where I was going to talk about the engineer that was on the Argo, whose name was Orion, who had the wave motion gun, which by the way, can I just tell you this? That I was reading some article, I remember some damn internet site. I was defaulted to say everything is Wired, and it probably wasn't Wired, but they were talking about the science of sci-fi and sci-fi things, you know, things that existed in television shows that were created for television programs that now actually exist or that they think they're going to be able to make. Like how there's that story that comes out about every 3 months now about how they've created Harry Potter's invisibility cloak, which I think they've created like 100 different times now because it's like it's always on the cover of The Sun. But they were just talking about like the dilithium crystal, you know, thing, which I believe is what powers the... isn't that what powers the... what powers
the
warp drive or whatever on
the
Enterprise? Anyway, they were talking about the wave motion engine, which is what powers not only the faster-than-light warping ability on the Argo or the Yamato, but is also what powers the wave motion gun, which is what they use, for example, against the Comet Empire at the end of Season 2. I have no point here except to say that in every walk of human life, in every endeavor, in every generation, in every time, in every era, whatever millennium you might exist within, there is always a man who knows such things, the ins and outs of mechanical and electronic and electric devices, a man
who can take something apart and put it back together again. Often, you know, it's a man like our friend Andy, the listener who came in this morning. He's the one who created the Linux Pumpkin, spends all day taking apart transmissions, putting them back together. And unlike, let's say, me or about half the people in the United States, he doesn't do that and end up with a big pile of gewgaws on the floor that ought to go in there somewhere, but he can't quite find the place for them. He knows how everything comes apart. He knows how everything goes back together. And you need a guy like that around. When it comes to your electrical system at home, when it comes to your wiring, it is no different. You contact Mr. Joe Squires and Squires Electric at SquiresElectric.com or 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. Because here's the thing. No matter how much he may tell you, like, you know, I can't give her any more, Captain. The thing is, they can always secretly give her a little bit more, Captain. You know, they know how. You don't know how, but you don't need to know how because you got them, and then the know-how is in them. And so, therefore, goo-goo-ga-joob. I didn't end that with a rhetorical flourish that I was hoping for.
I love it when you paint yourself into a verbal
there
corner.
Was just no way out of that. So I just went right down through the floor. Anyway, whether it's electrical wiring, a wiring of any kind, whether it's a brand new building or whether it's a building that you are upgrading, if it's a place that maybe it's a house that you know, was built 50, 60 years ago and you don't want to plug something in and have the entire place just turn into a cinder overnight, you don't want to have to screw with that. You don't have to worry about your, you know, whether it's going to be able to hold the strain from all of your heating and your Christmas tree lights and the lights outside your house as you get into the holidays, especially when everybody else is, you know, drawing like five times the energy they normally do because it's, you know, 35 degrees outside. You want to be able to know that your electrical system is going to get you through the winter without any trouble at all. So if you have even like the vaguest shadow of a doubt, do yourself a favor. You call Squires Electric at 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609 or go to SquiresElectric.com. They've been in Portland for over a decade doing what they do. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. And by the time they leave, you know what? Things are just going to work, period. 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Greetings, programs. Aaron Duran here with GeekInTheCity.com, and this is your week in Geek. First, yet one more franchise receives the Hollywood reboot treatment as everyone's favorite French-Scottish alien immortal saga Highlander returns. Why am I covering this? Well, simple.
I am immortal. I have inside me blood of kings.
Yeah. Sorry. Any chance to queen out, really? Next, proving Japan isn't the only country with an obsession with video games and gaming culture, Zaragoza, Spain, just unveiled a street name in their newest housing district, Avenida de Super Mario Brothers. Yep, in an attempt to get young people to buy new homes, the town of Zaragoza is naming new streets after popular video games. Zelda Lane and Space Invaders Way are already in the making. In related news, Portland still won't allow Douglas Adams Boulevard. Finally, you are just 4 weeks away from the Geek in the City comic book debut. La Brujeria Issue 1 hits Portland comic book stores December 7th, 2010. Don't live in Portland? You can drop an email to Aaron at geekinthecity.com. I'm Aaron Duran of geekinthecity.com, and that was your week in Geek.
As I walk through the valley where I harvest my grain, I take a look at my wife and realize she's very plain. But that's just perfect for an Amish like me. You know I shun fancy things like electricity. At 4:30 in the morning, I'm milking cows. Jebediah feeds the chickens and Jacob plows. Fool, and I've been milking and plowing so long that even Ezekiel thinks that my mind is gone. I'm a man of the land, I'm into discipline. Got a Bible in my hand and a beard on my chin. But if I finish all of my chores and you finish thine, then tonight we're gonna party like it's 1699. We've been spending most our lives living in an Amish paradise. A churn butter once or twice, living in an Amish paradise. It's hard work and sacrifice, living in an Amish paradise. We sell quilts at discount price, living in an Amish paradise. A local boy kicked me in the butt last week. I just smiled at him and I turned the other cheek. I really don't care, in fact I wish him well. Cause I'll be laughing my head off when he's burning in hell. But I ain't never punched a tourist even if he deserved it. An Amish with a tool, you know that's unheard of. I never wear buttons, but I got a cool hat. And my homies agree I really look good in black, fool. If you come to visit, you'll be bored to tears. We haven't even paid the phone bill in 300 years. But we ain't really quaint, so please don't point and stare. We're just technologically impaired. There's no phone, no lights, no motor car, not a single luxury. Like Robinson Crusoe, it's as primitive as can be. We've been spending most our lives living in an Amish paradise. We're just plain and simple guys living in an Amish paradise. There's no time for sin. Up the buggy, churning lots of butter. Raise the barn on Monday, soon I'll raise another. Think you're really righteous? Think you're pure in heart? Well, I know I'm a million times as humble as thou art. I'm the pious guy the little omelets wanna be like. On my knees day and night, scoring points for the afterlife. So don't be vain, and don't be whiny, or else my brother, I might have to get medieval on your hiney. We've been spending most our lives living in.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Be sure to join us tomorrow when our guests will include Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. Wednesday, dueling guests. We'll have Anna Griffin from The Oregonian.
Thursday.
Also, Thursday? What did I say?
Wednesday. Said Wednesday.
What the hell is today? Where am I?
Today is Tuesday.
Okay.
Tomorrow, Kelly Clark. Thursday, Anna Griffin.
And
Mike Russell.
Mr. Mike Russell from the Oregonian, culturepulp.com, and interviewer of Berkeley Breathed.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk to him about that. And then Friday, that's something. It's gone now. I have no faith in my own day of the week knowledge now. It's just that ship has sailed. Hey, real quickly, before we do anything else, I mentioned this during Legion of News, so I want to read it right here, y'all. So Cheryl Kanakoa passed this along to me last night. You said you got the same thing, but I think you just deleted it without reading it.
I remember it was one of those things that I saw it in my email, and then I just saw it, and the subject line was so bizarre, and I just kind of went, and I just ended up deleting it without really paying any attention
to it. It's just spam from Walgreens, and it's like, and I get these same things because I think I got some photos. I think I got my headshots, which you then derided, made at the Walgreens photo lab, and so as a result, they're just sending me crap all the time. So anyway, so she gets these, these things from Walgreens. She forwarded to me. She said, I thought this email from Walgreens was hilarious. I clicked the link to see what they considered personal care products because the subject line here is, this is from Walgreens. And again, this is not like it went to Cheryl specifically, but they sent this to everybody because I said, I got the same thing and I just deleted it. The subject line was, shop discreetly and save on personal items. And so the thing there is the personal items coupled with like the discreetly.
Well, yeah, shop discreetly. I was kind of like, so I just said, okay, that's going to be like, you know, things you would be embarrassed, I guess, to buy in store.
That is things
was
for
my
your
assumption.
And I would imagine things for your anus is probably a lot of what that is. Again, not Cheryl specifically. I'm just saying in general. It says shop discreetly, save on personal items. She said, I clicked the link to see what they consider personal care products you may want to buy discreetly. Products included, and these are the ones that are not on the front page. I don't know where I should go first, but I'll just say that when she clicked on the link, additional products included a breathalyzer, a cryogenic wart removal system, and a home drug testing kit. And it does make you wonder, I mean, first of all, is the breathalyzer, is that like the thing you just blow into and it just reads out the, like the number or whatever?
Yeah, I guess it tells you how boozed up you are.
Yeah, so there's that, and then the cryogenic wart removal system, which I do believe is that's the freezing of the wart, right? Which I guess used to be a thing that you had to get done in the doctor's office.
Yeah.
Or they would like burn it off or they would do something.
Or if your mother was a nurse like mine was at a dermatology clinic at a major university, she would just bring home some liquid nitrogen and do it at home.
I cannot just tell you this. Let me just tell you, here's what you miss out on by being a single child, by not having, you know, by being an only child, not having siblings. You miss this. You miss your older sister, and by your older sister, I mean my older sister, coming home after having, because she had the whole warty hand going on, which I think they eventually got rid of at some point, but like several of her fingers had the warts, and, you know, the whole... She was a teenage girl, and she was worried that nobody would ask her to the spring formal because she had warty hand or whatever. And so they would just, like, you know, my mom was a nurse, so she hooked her up with all kinds of, like, you know, they were trying to do all kinds of different treatments, and the warts kept, you know, like, the wart kept growing back or whatever and whatever. But I just remember being about, I don't know, maybe 7. And probably at that age, I was a little bastard and deserved it. But my sister going and getting the wart burned off her hand, and then her coming home and just taking the wart-free, burned-up section of her hand and just shoving it into my face and just rubbing it around, going like, look at this. They burned the wart off, and now you have to touch it. And then just spending what seemed like an eternity slowly rubbing her burned-up, wartless hand all over my face, and then just snickering. And then every time a friend would come over to visit her, the friend would come hold me down and she would do it again. And I was like the home entertainment center for about a week and a half. Anyway, so there's the cryogenic wart removal system, drug test kit, breathalyzer. But then the best part is actually the photo that accompanies the ad where there's a woman, she's kind of like a Portia de Rossi looking woman, and she's got her finger to her lips as though saying, shh, shop discreetly and save, it says, featuring such items as. And then it just has the categories.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at it right now. I opened it up, so.
Tell me which one of these things doesn't belong. Sexual wellness, incontinence, feminine needs, hair regrowth.
Yeah, I was just looking at this and saying, you know, sexual wellness, and there's a picture of the KY Intense package.
Is that what that is? See?
Yeah.
It's very telling, by the way, that you knew what it was, because I could only see the word intense. I didn't know.
Oh, well, I've seen it in ads and stuff. I've never actually tried it myself, but I've seen ads. And then incontinence, and there's a picture of the Attends briefed, which I guess are like poopy pants for adults. Then there's feminine.
That's exactly how the adults like for you to refer to them.
And there's feminine needs, and there's a picture of Stay Free maxi pads. And then it says, yeah, hair regrowth, and there's a picture of Rogaine. And like, really? Is it that embarrassing to go buy Rogaine?
Well, I was going to do
that. I mean, people can tell if you don't have hair. It's like, it's not, you're not. You know, you're not hiding it from anybody.
It's funny because I actually emailed Cheryl this last night, and I was sort of see, we're kind of channeling each other now because you're doing that. You're taking, you know, you're being offended at the idea that they're saying the guy's hair regrowth or whatever is something to be ashamed of. Meanwhile, I respond. I think we swapped chromosomes or something because I responded to Cheryl last night like I'd switched on my Steinem mode, and I said, "Well, how weird that they put the maxi pads right between the incontinent things and the Rogaine, you know, because of the shame over your lady parts." Which is sort of, I mean, that was the thing that was weird to me, is that, like, you would have to discreetly buy your maxi pads, because otherwise somebody might know that you have a vagina.
Yeah, I haven't been embarrassed about buying tampons since I was, like, you know, 12.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, I got over that sometime in my early
teens. Is that
a
thing that chicks are embarrassed of, though? I mean, like, adult women, are women embarrassed to buy maxi pads?
You shouldn't be.
I'm not saying you shouldn't be, but I'm saying, do you know, well, you probably don't know women that are, but I'm...
No, I don't know any women
that can't imagine, once you get out of your teenage years... And even as a teenager, I would imagine you're probably not that embarrassed because it's like a mark of womanhood and it's a ritual and whatever.
I mean, I know guys that are uncomfortable around even the mention of feminine care products, but, you know, I'm not married to one of them.
No, I mean, it's like,
in fact,
you know.
He even picks them up sometimes when I don't even – he's like, oh, yeah, I noticed you were out of tampons. Here, I got you some. I'm like, you're the most awesome husband.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not like I really think about it a lot, but that's a thing that I have never gotten the whole, you know – we're like, you know, like Laura, well, you know, okay, can you get me a box? I'm like, yeah, whatever, you know. It's like I think that I have sufficient self-esteem, you know, as a man that I'm not going to – it's like I'm not going to be shattered by the idea that I have to pick up a cardboard box off the shelf and hand it to her.
I mean, I could see, you know, not wanting to go into Walgreens and buy like a great big giant thing of poopy pants. But, you know, I was at Walgreens just yesterday when I picked up the Cosmopolitan magazine, in fact. And there was a guy who was looking at the same section of shelf I was when I was picking something up. I was buying a new toothbrush, and he was like on the section right across from me looking at a shelf and couldn't find what he wanted. And he walked over, and I saw him kind of pausing, like he had to ask the pharmacist, but he wasn't sure if he wanted to ask while someone could overhear. But unfortunately, I had to come around, and like I was looking for something in the first aid section, which was like, you know, right where he was standing. So he kind of butched up and then just did it anyway. And he's like, and he asked for something that is for treating staph infections. And he seemed, but I could tell that he was like really doing that thing where, I am going to ask this for this in a way that shows I am not ashamed.
Remember, he says it really, really loudly.
Yes.
Yeah. No, it's because he's embracing it because he doesn't want to indicate that there's any horror or embarrassment involved.
The
in
fact
that
he has some kind of horrible giant red pussy infection
he's
somewhere
covered with a fungus on large sections of his body. All right. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. Still to come, we got your Taser Watch and we got your top five songs from May 14th, 1983. In just a few minutes here, we'll actually talk about, I will talk about Dexter. Dawn and I will trade thoughts about the season finale of Eastbound and Down. And then we have more on the way at the news desk. It is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
I will just say, though, shopping discreetly at Walgreens, I had no idea until this moment the wide variety of personal massagers that are available via mail order from Walgreens.
Oh, yeah. No, they know where their bread's buttered.
I mean, these aren't even like the ones that pretend to be back massagers.
No, it's just
this is like the one with the rabbit.
It's like a full-on schlong wand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
The one with the, here's the thing I don't get. Here's the one that, the vibrator that does that puzzles me. It's the rabbit that has like the little. It's the rabbit that looks like a gumball machine. It's got the little bouncy balls inside.
Oh, yeah.
What is up with that?
Is
that just for like? Is that just so the guy has something to look at? You know, like if he's not into it, then he's just been like, well, I guess I'll just watch these things bounce back.
No,
and
the
forth.
Kind that has that that actually the body of the thing itself,
right.
The shaft,
yes.
If you will. Actually rotates. It actually
right.
moves. Well, and those things actually create kind of a
it's like a bunch of little marbles, right?
Yeah. It's I think it's a textural thing. It's for pushing things out and around when it's moving around while it's
I'm not talking about where it's got like nubs on the outside.
No, I'm not either.
Okay. So you're saying but this is like the hard plastic thing, but on the inside it's got like little like it looks like little
mm-hmm.
gumballs.
Yeah.
And you're saying what
like,
is so it's like
they're
is
like, they're like tapioca or
is
something.
Is it like a dish? Is it like additional vibration?
I don't know if it creates additional vibration. I think it's more just a thing of it allows the thing to rotate around without actually rubbing because it pushes out on the little balls as the thing rotates around inside
right.
that.
Okay.
I don't know a better way to
explain
really,
it. Yeah, I really get
yeah.
This is like when you see the rubbers and it's like, you know, the ribbed for, you know, studded for, and you just to figure that that's just a lie. That's like undercarriage coating in a car. It doesn't really do anything. I mean, they're charging you more for it, but there's really no need.
No, because there is no actual physical sensation on nerve endings inside the.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's yeah. So when they say you that like you know the, it's for her pleasure, that is just so some guy can feel like he's done his part. Well, baby, I got the ribbed ones. I mean, you should be fine, right? I mean, you'll just take care of it yourself. It'll all work out.
I think it's more for to create kind of a pressure massagey sort of thing as it rotates around, because otherwise it would just feel like something was wiggling around.
Well, that's and it seems like it would be loud. I mean, I've not used one.
They are loud.
Really, it just seems like sort of a like you're running a rock tumbler inside your inside your good lady.
Yeah, no, those things are loud.
Yeah, no, do not want. All right, you are listening to the Rick Emerson the cavalcade of vaginal discourse. Here's Dawn Taylor.
Let's move on to our horrifying taser watch.
All right, here's your taser. This isn't going to be somebody being tased, like, in the uterus or something, is it?
No.
Okay, here's your taser
you
watch.
You got me running, going out of my mind.
I can do it, bro!
You got me thinking that I'm wasting my time.
Don't tase me, bro!
Excellent. By the way, somebody said that he's changing his email SIG file to read full-on schlong wand. All right. Thank you, sir. Here's Dawn Taylor with your Taser Watch.
A burglary call for South Carolina sheriff's deputies turned bizarre Monday morning when their suspect was found drugged and naked with a mouse in his rectum. Authorities responded late Monday morning after a resident complained of a burglar. When deputies arrived, they found Noah Smith, 31, lying face down and naked inside the doorway of the victim's home. When the deputy tried to make contact with Smith, he slapped the deputy. In return, the deputy deployed his taser,
excellent,
which had no effect on Smith. With reinforcements, deputies approached Smith again in the victim's bedroom. A deputy managed to handcuff Smith before he jumped off the victim's bed and tried to kick other deputies in the room. Then, according to the report, Smith was pepper sprayed. Undeterred, Smith continued to kick at the officers and otherwise evade capture. He was struck with a police baton several times, and Smith attempted to bite a deputy.
Is he now? Is he nude this whole time? Is
yes.
he okay? So he's naked.
Yes.
Really? What is? I mean, look. I don't know if this says something about the guy that he's all high on the PCP, or if it says something about law enforcement techniques. If you're beating a guy who's nude and you can't subdue him, it seems like maybe you're beating him in the wrong way. You got to be, you know, maybe you don't know how to do it because it seems like you were especially vulnerable at that point.
Oh, yes.
Maybe you can't go for the junk. Maybe they tell the cops not to, you know, to avoid junk hits.
Of course, when the taser and the pepper spray failed to stop you.
Yeah, something else going on there.
Smith's head and mouth were covered with a blanket to prevent him from biting. He was wrestled down so shackles could be placed on his legs and his arms were hogtied. An EMS crew responded and provided a stretcher to which Smith was also tied. Deputy's officer from the Seneca Police Department opined that Smith might have been high on mushrooms and identified equipment that could be used to get high in the victim's home. During a medical exam at a nearby hospital, medical personnel found a mouse tail hanging from Smith's rectum. An X-ray revealed a mouse lodged inside Smith. He told emergency room personnel he could not remember what happened to him.
Okay. How did I know before you even said this that he was going to claim no knowledge of how the mouse, like it was the mouse's idea or something, or maybe he'd rebuffed the mouse's advances in the past, but maybe when he was drunk, the mouse took advantage of his inebriated state to take what the mouse had been asking for all along, and that he, what is his name?
His name is Noah Smith.
That he, Noah Smith, had, advances that he had, refused because he's a gentleman and doesn't wish to engage in that kind of, I don't understand. I mean,
there's a lot of questions that this story raises.
Was he alone? There was nobody else there?
Well, he burglarized this house where they found drug paraphernalia and equipment that belonged to the people who lived there.
But not to, okay, so maybe he
but
was...
But he was not the person who lived there.
Do the people, did they, is there any response from the people who actually owned the house?
No.
Like, did they say, like, oh, that crazy Noah? Or did they say, like, hey, I don't know who this guy is?
No, you know as much as I know here. There is a photo of him in the, I sent it to you in the Dropbox.
If you go to rickemerson.com, is this Mouse Man?
Mouse
it would
Man.
Almost have to be.
Mouse Man.
Unless the news is much more interesting than I'm anticipating. If you go to rickemerson.com/pictures, go to visual aids for November 9th, 2010, and you're going to look for the photo that says, yes, Mouse Man. And you're going to see a photo of this guy who, this is, okay, now this is not what I imagined he would look like. He looks like a stout, sort of a stocky kind of a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why that surprises me. He's got piercing blue eyes. Even from this mugshot, I can see he's got really unnerving eyes.
Although some of that could just be the result of being sprayed in the face with pepper spray.
No, that's true. That's a fair point. He doesn't look real clean, though. Looks like it's been some time since our friend Noah has had a shower. Okay, you know, but maybe the mouse doesn't. You know, maybe the mouse prefers him when he's a little pungent.
Yeah.
Maybe
I have questions about how and why the mouse was in his rectum. About how he ended up naked and face down on the floor when these people were calling and reporting a burglar.
I wonder if this... Okay, this is just me. I'm just sort of spitballing here. I'm just freestyling this. It seems... I cannot possibly imagine that someone, unless they were, like, pledging a fraternity or something, I can't imagine that someone would say, like, you know, we're out of weed and it doesn't disappear. There's no more Jack Daniels. But I found a mouse outside, and so I think that this is, you know, there's going to be a sensation here that probably is new and different. It might be a little exciting.
I've been doing a lot of mushrooms, so it seems like a good idea.
Yes, I need to. Here's what I'm going to need you. Carl, you're going to be the spreader. John, you're going to be the shover. You know, because as I'm saying, like, it's not a one person.
I feel terrible for the mouse.
This is my thing. It's like, the mouse almost certainly. I was going to say the mouse had to be dead beforehand. Because, you know, you got to figure the mouse is like, F that. Like, I don't want any part of this guy's ass. So the mouse is probably dead. But on the other hand, maybe not. Because I apologize to, let's just say it, to Cheryl and to, like, whoever is, just like, maybe just started subscribing. Because I just saw some, like, right before the show, I got, like, so-and-so has just begun subscribing to and welcome to the program. And are you glad you're here? Because if the mouse is dead, unless the mouse had been dead and refrigerated, or maybe rigor mortis had set in.
Or he'd just been sat on a plate on the top shelf of the fridge for like 4 or 5 days till he got stiff.
Except it wouldn't still be there. The mouse would be in the trash and they'd have to go hunting for it, wouldn't they, Don? The mouse is going to be somewhat pliable, I would imagine. And so then it's just going to be like you're trying to drill with a rope. Hmm. That's just not going to work. You know, you're trying to, that's just, you know, that's the,
You know, that's like, you know, you're hammering with a slinky. There's just no point. So the placement of the mouse, it seems like, had to have had an accomplice. And I don't believe it was other mice that did this. I don't believe that he's like a Jersey, that he's like the Hudson River or something for like mice informants.
Could have been cats.
I guess.
Evil cats.
I get it. But cats are evil. I mean, don't get me wrong. But cats, in my experience, typically wait for your, you know, for your slumber to set in. They wait till you're asleep to do that kind of a thing. That's when they steal your breath, too.
Maybe this guy fell asleep. Maybe he fell asleep and then, you know.
Is it possible that they Is it possible that he was at the house with whoever lives there and they were getting high and somebody said, hey, why don't we eat with this mouse and your ass? And somebody, that's a great idea. And then they got as far as placing the mouse. And then a couple of them looked at each other or they sobered up and they went, oh, wow. Hold on, let's check. Oh, God, we did. All right, let's leave now and just say he broke in. Like, maybe some, you know, maybe shame hit a couple of them.
The people who were responsible for it left, and then, like, the roommate came home and didn't know who he was or why he was there with a mouse in his ass.
Okay. No, see, now that's good. I feel you there, as they say. Because if you were there with some guy, and whether it was your idea or his idea, however the mouse became lodged in the, in what our friend Gibby Haynes was called the independent worm saloon, if the mouse became lodged in there, you would start to assess, I think, on a pretty rapid at a pretty rapid pace and in a very serious level, how is this going to look, and how is this situation going to resolve itself?
And perhaps if this guy, the mouse, was still alive somehow, and the mouse was perhaps trying to get out and biting the guy or something, maybe he passed out from the pain. And at that point, the guy is unconscious, and he's naked, and he has a mouse in his butt, and that's when you go, you know, I think maybe we should leave now.
I think that really you could subtract everything from that sentence except mouse in the butt, and it's like the outcome would be the same. We're leaving. We're going to the mall. We're going to go to the movies. We're going to go see Saw 3D. You figure this out yourself. Because if they were trying to tase him and pepper spray him and that didn't knock him out, I know that's a sensitive area of the body, but the mouse bite isn't going to knock it. I mean, he looks like a strong guy. And I would imagine, how long can a mouse possibly survive in there?
Yeah.
I mean, you got to figure that's a relatively, anaerobic environment.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay,
exactly a habit trail.
Can you do me a favor? Can you just flag this guy's name or make a Google alert or something out of this? Because I want to know if there's some sort of a follow up.
Okay.
If there's some sort of a we get some sort of, I don't know, supplementary information that comes out about this.
Yeah.
That I want to I want to figure out what the resolution of this story is.
If we can learn more later.
Yeah. Because you got to figure that if you are all getting high and you suddenly realize, like, this guy just jammed a mouse into his anus, that's, you know, you don't want your name to be linked to this guy, right? So you just leave and you figure that the roommate or whoever, or you just call the cops on the way to the movie theater and say, I don't know, we were leaving the house and it looks like we saw somebody going in the back window. The cops show up
You know he needs help.
And there's
and you don't want to actually be complicit in this. So, yes. So you leave the house but you go, we got a burglar.
Right. That's like if you shoot a guy, but you don't want to have to stick around and answer any questions. You just shoot a guy, you know, like if you're robbing a convenience store, but you have to gack the guy behind the counter. But you don't want him to die. So you hit the payphone on the way to your getaway car or something. Or, you know, and plus, you know, you're going to have two or three news cycles where this guy is dominating the headlines. And, you know, and by the time your involvement in this comes out, like, it'll, you know, the people have moved on from the story. All we're going to remember is this guy hereafter known as Mouse Man.
Mm-hmm.
All right. There's your taser. But the taser ended up being such an incidental part of that. But how could it not?
Yeah.
All right. There's your. All right. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Coming up here in just a bit, we'll do the top five. We got the top five songs from May 14th, 1983. The top five songs from May 14th, 1983. We should take a moment, though, to talk about Sunday's series finale of Eastbound and Down, which aired on HBO. It was episode 7 of season 2. So I had watched it last night. You'd gotten about halfway through.
Yeah.
Now that you have concluded the second season of Eastbound and Down, your thoughts, Sean Taylor?
I have to... It's... It's so hard to sum up because, honest to God, the last scene of that episode, honest to God, I found myself feeling a little misty. This show can manipulate me so much. I mean, again, Kenny Powers is still a horrible person.
He's reprehensible.
He's a terrible, terrible person. There's absolutely no reason on earth that we should sympathize with him, that we should care about what happens to him. And yet, when he's standing there talking to April and he finds out that that's his baby and he's just all at a loss for words, and she says whatever it is she says to him about, like, I have no interest in being in love with you anymore.
Right.
And he's just like, okay, I get that. But it's just like, I was like, I felt my heart break a little bit for him.
And then they do that thing where, like, and he says...
Then he says something asinine.
Well, he asks her if she wants to go to lunch or to dinner or whatever. You know, do you want to go get... You know, I think he says, do you want to go get lunch? Yeah. And she says, yes. And he goes, well, I'll drive. And she just goes, I'll follow you, which was really sad. That was a really legitimately sad moment when he says, I'll drive.
I can understand why you might be hesitant to.
But they get to the restaurant and they get out. And there's that thing where they're walking in and doing the classic Jody Hill slow motion walk to the camera with a song that I didn't recognize on the soundtrack, but it's sort of melancholy, kind of a plaintive song. And then, you know, I got to tell you, just this is like, this show is such a love fest for Jody Hill, but I mean, the balls on that guy, because just to end the season that way with just, it's not even, I mean, I guess it is open-ended, sort of, but I mean, it's kind of a resolution, but just to end it in a way that is such a tone shift from like 98% of the rest of this season, where they just do the thing of walking to the camper, they're not talking, they're kind of walking close to each other, but not really, they're not holding hands. They do like a little half turn look at each other, and then she kind of smiles just a littlest bit, but then they keep walking to the camera, and then it's just, and then it just goes to the credits, and you're like, well, what, you know, and you just, it sound, and all of this sounds so retarded to say, because it's Kenny Powers, who is just, as you said, a loathsome human being. And it also sounds like such a cliche if it wasn't such a well-done show. It sounds so corny to say, but it is a great way to end that episode, especially because he didn't know they were getting a third season when they did it, so he thought that might have been the season finale, because that is sort of the way that life goes. There is, in life, there very rarely are black and white, very definitive ends to things. It's like some, you know, things, very rarely does something have a sort of, you know, it's like a picture-perfect end or even a very comprehensive, all-inclusive dissolution. Things just sort of fade out a lot of the time, you know, or they are left at an indeterminate point, and that is exactly what's happening with them. And you know,
and then the great scene with him talking to Stevie, because Stevie, his Mexican wife has moved her family into his apartment, and. But yes, you're telling Kenny that he's being, as we talked about yesterday, he's being strangled by Mexicans. Better to be strangled by a necklace of Mexicans than to be strangled by no one.
And the other thing about Eastbound and Down is that I think it gets away with this because Kenny, and specifically Kenny, but like Kenny and Stevie, for example, and Stevie's not even a bad person. He's just so unbelievably dense. I mean, he's just like the stupidest man on earth. But you know, Kenny is such a horrible human being that in a weird way, and plus, because the show is so unapologetic, that they just get away with so much humor that you could never, ever get away with. And I don't even mean just because it's HBO.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about the flack that, I mean, this is the wrong comparison to make because it's not the same scenario at all. But if you think about the whole thing, you know, with Dr. Laura and the whole, you know, thing with her using the, you know, the N-word with the collar and the whatever.
Yeah.
But then you look at a show like South Park, where they did the, you know, they had that a couple of years ago, they had the episode where the word was used like 50 times or something. Because it's all about how you handle it, right? It's about how you handle a particular type of humor or a particular joke. And it is that there's nothing that can't be made funny or handled in a way that is correct for the situation and that rings sort of, that rings appropriate. Or that at least rings no more inappropriate than anything else you're doing. And that Jody Hill guy is just a master at that. Because the idea that Stevie meets this Mexican woman and brings her home, and then immediately the next shot is like of all of her cousins who have moved into the apartment and won't leave. Which, in the best case scenario, typically would just be cliche, and in the worst case scenario, would come off as really offensive. But it's like they do it in this way that it seems like a joke you've never heard before, amazingly enough, and that also is hilarious, which is not an easy trick to pull off. And that he can create phrases like better to be strangled by a necklace full of Mexicans than to be strangled by no one at all. That's like when he said the thing about all the ass magic in Mexico is not going to keep me there. How great was that speech that he gives at the dinner table, though, the one that Seamus referenced, where he goes, I guess I'll just go on like a human killing machine, striking out one man after another joylessly because nobody loves me, my heart is dead. You know, it's like where Kenny Powers is just the star of his own. He is the star of his own film in which he is played by George Clooney, as I think Seamus said.
And he gets just enough. One of the genius things about the way they present this character is he gets just enough reinforcement.
Right.
Like coming back across the border at the beginning of this episode, and he rolls away and tells the Border Patrol guy that, you know, do you recognize who I am? I'm Kenny Powers. And damned if the guy doesn't get excited by this.
Yeah.
And so it just rewards him for being an idiot.
God, and that the moment I wait for, the best moment of every episode of Eastbound and Down, is for me trying to figure out when the title card's going to come up. Because you can never really spot it. I figured it was going to happen a little bit earlier than it did. But they do that great title card thing where it's like Maria's peeking out from underneath the blanket in the back seat. And she just looks up and she's got this weird cockeyed look from underneath like an Afghan in the back seat. And then she just has the Eastbound and Down. And they do it there as opposed to the more obvious place, which would have been the next scene where Kenny, to celebrate their arrival in North Carolina, is littering out of the side of his SUV and Maria's waving her breasts out the side at, like, passers-by. Which I actually rewound and I watched two or three times because it was the funniest goddamn thing I'd ever seen in my life.
I liked when Maria brought Kenny's tapes to April, too,
yeah,
and walked up and very shyly said, Tits grande?
And that April
says, yes, that's me.
That's me. And that sequence of Kenny just standing on the table in the cafeteria. And I was checking to see, because it's such a relentlessly profane speech that he's giving those kids. I was looking to see when the kids were in frame and when they weren't. But there's a lot of that horribly profane, offensive speech that was done with like 200 children like in the room hearing it, which is sort of great.
And then the whole thing, it's like being told to get down off the table.
Yeah.
God, come on, it's school lunch. It's like $1.50. Who the F cares?
And here's the thing. I don't know a whole lot about Kids in the Hall. That is a show that I missed.
That guy was not
largely
in Kids in the Hall.
I thought he was a Kids in the Hall guy.
It was, and he may or may not have been Reno 911. He was with one of those groups, like The State or something, but he wasn't in Kids in the Hall.
Okay, so it's a thing I guess I wouldn't know, because I knew that he came from some sort of comedy troupe somewhere. But that is a show that is cast so well and so perfectly. I mean, you know, even down to Kenny's, like, brother and sister-in-law, you know, where the sister-in-law has kind of a Catherine O'Hara kind of a thing going on.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's just, it really is. Maybe it's because the show is only, like, 6 or 7 episodes long per season that it retains so much punch. I mean, I don't know if you watched, we were talking about this actually, I guess, earlier in the show or in Legion of News, about how shows used to be 22 episodes long. And you know, I don't really know that. I don't know that 22 episodes of Eastbound and Down would necessarily be all that great in a single sitting. I think it is the fact that they do it in short doses
they
like
that.
They
cram so much into that 6 episodes that they're doing.
I mean, it really, I think if you tried to extend it to, if you tried to extend Eastbound and Down too long, or if it was watered down by the meddling hand of a network, you know, what you'd have is My Name is Earl.
Andrew Daly was in Upright Citizens Brigade.
Oh, okay. All right. So that's why I kind of recognize him, but not quite. So anyway, but if you guys are not watching Eastbound and Down again, they just wrapped the second season. There's only 13 episodes total, 7.5 hours of television. Steel yourselves for a kind of program that you probably have not seen on television before.
And if you actually just sit down and watch the first 2 seasons straight through, it's like watching just a really hilarious and dark and profane feature film.
Yeah.
You know, and if you've seen Observe and Report, it's much the same thing.
By the way, you know what else I have sitting at home?
And if you haven't seen Observe and Report, shame on you.
I have not only Bride of Frankenstein and the 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T, but I also have Foot Fist Way, which I have not seen, but which is waiting for me. So that's all stuff I got to try to get watched this weekend. So there you go. So Eastbound and Down. And then I watch Dexter, which...
Why?
Because,
why are you doing this to yourself?
Because somebody has to. Here's the thing. Do you know why I'm watching Dexter? It's like in season 4 of The West Wing, when Leo McGarry is at the White House late one night, and it's the anniversary of his divorce. And everybody's concerned that Leo McGarry, a recovering alcoholic who's been dry for some time, is going to start drinking again at the thought of his dissolution, the dissolution of his marriage to his wife, Jenny. Mm. And so his secretary, Margaret, sticks around all night to make sure that he doesn't fall off the wagon and hit the sauce. And Leo says at one point, "You know, Margaret, you can go home." And she says, "I go home when you go home." There are listeners watching Dexter. They are tuning in every week. They are taking it on the chin as viewers. They are expecting Showtime to deliver entertainment to them, and they are being let down. They are being failed by Showtime each and every week. They are giving up an hour of their short goddamn lives to a show that no longer cares about them and that just fails to deliver on even the most basic level of entertainment.
So you're just watching this basically as a way to hold your hand out to the listener and share this experience with them with love.
It's like a sort of... It's like a televisual Hands Across America.
It's like when somebody that you care about goes to the emergency room and has to get stitches, and you like hold their hand while they're going through the pain.
It's like when everybody shaves their heads because of the guy at school that's getting chemo. That's what it is. So yeah. As long as the listeners, you know, we're going to watch Dexter, and I know they do because I get emails about it every week. They're like, "Hey, didn't this week suck?" And I go, yes, sir, madam, this week sucked. But it's like, you know, together we're sort of, you know, we're like we're getting through. We're, you know, it's, we're lessening the pain by going through it together. I got to tell you, I don't even know. I've lost track of where in the season with Dexter we are. I don't know how many episodes it is. I think it's maybe 13. Hmm. Do you remember how long Dexter was last year with Lithgow?
I think it was 13.
So we got to be closer to the end than the beginning, I would think. I think we're like maybe episode 8 or something. But I got to tell you, I am so ready to never see Julia Stiles again ever in like anything. And that thing that I post.
Who is she playing in this?
So she plays. She's some chick who gets kidnapped by some group of guys. There's like some group of guys, I guess. Although they leave just enough of a red herring that it might be just that she's crazy. Who knows? I mean, the whole thing might be a ruse, and she might really just be some nutcase girl who's nuts. But she's a girl that has presumably been kidnapped by a group of guys who brutalized her, and then we're going to kill her, Dexter. While stalking a serial killer, stumbles across her in a closet where she had been kept by these guys. She sees him kill her captor. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, he can't just let her go because she saw him kill somebody. Mm-hmm. So then he has to keep her around, except then it turns out that she's nuts because she was kidnapped and witnessed a bunch of whatever. And so now she's crazy. The Padawan, the thing, you know, the... Always two there are, a master and apprentice. So now he's the master and he's the Palpatine and she's the Anakin.
So she's learning to kill people?
She's learning to kill, but learning really slowly and badly and while asking a bunch of irritating questions in a really shrill, whiny sort of a voice.
So do you think the showrunners, the writers, they saw the whole relationship with Beale and the redheaded teenager and thought, hey, people like that.
Yeah.
We should have one of those on our show.
It is a lot like that. What is that chick's name on True Blood? Jessica.
Jessica.
Redheaded vampire Jessica and Beale Compton. And that is, it is a very similar relationship, except that girl who plays Jessica, though, I don't even know that she has chemistry with what's-his-name, Stephen the guy.
No one has chemistry with him, though.
But she's a good actress, though. She's actually pretty great.
No, she's good.
Julia Stiles, whether she can act or not, like, in general, like, in the overall sense of her career, she's not acting well on Dexter. I mean, or maybe she's just not getting the right direction or something. And I'm spending a lot of time talking about a show that is terrible.
Yeah, maybe the show's just terrible.
But everybody seems really lost. And here's the other thing about Dexter at this point, is it seems like all of the different... It seems like all of the different aspects of the show are no longer even taking place, like, in the same universe. Because it used to be that, like, what his sister, you know, Deb, is, you know, she's a cop, and she's investigating some crime, which probably intersects with a thing that Dexter is doing, you know? And meanwhile, there's, like, some guy investigating, you know, the strange goings-on in Miami-Dade from, like, the FBI or whatever. And, you know, Dexter's trying to hide something from somebody else.
Yeah, a lot of the suspense and the tension came from the idea that the intersecting aspects of his life could lead to his undoing.
And I guess that's still technically true now, but it no longer feels like it. It just feels like there's about four different shows that are happening at different, and they just, it's like you're watching a bunch of different shows by flipping back and forth between channels. That's a little bit what Dexter feels like now. The biggest comment that I can make on Dexter right now, and then we'll sort of just wrap this up, because this is just sort of echoes everything that everybody says on Facebook every week. They're like, why am I still watching? far and away, the two most likable characters on the show now are Deb, who I've always kind of liked, because she's, you know, she's great and she's hot and she's got a potty mouth and whatever. Like last time she says, well, S a brick and then F me with it. But Quinn has now become my favorite guy on the show.
Really?
I'm just, man, it's like every week I root for Quinn just to find Dexter and pistol whip him into a pulp and then lock him in a cell. Because, you know, maybe he's on the take, maybe he's not, maybe he's a dirty cop. They hinted that he was, but I don't think they ever said it. But that Quinn seems to be the only one who's actually doing police work. First of all, Quinn and maybe Deb. Miami must be a great place to commit murders because no one really seems to be concerned with actually catching criminals in any way. Just yeah. Quinn. You know.
And they don't really seem to have very many murders.
No.
Considering that homicide team is always working on just sort of one case at a time.
Yeah. The only real standout moment, there's been two standout moments for me this season. One is, what's his name, the perverse Emmy, Vince Masuka. Mm. There was where Dexter had dumped some bodies, you know, and like he almost got caught, but at the last minute he dumped some bodies and pretended, oh, I just showed up to the crime scene late. That's why I was racing. That's why I'm all sweaty. And he dumped these bodies covered in saran wrap. And Deb said, well, what the F? Why are they covered in saran wrap? And Vince Masuka says, he goes, I'll tell you why. Autoerotic mummification. And then you don't hear what he's saying. You just hear there's like some sort of jaunty, like Latin pop tune on the soundtrack. And then in slow motion, Vince Masuka is demonstrating with these elaborate hand gestures how erotic mummification works, including a whole extended, like, masturbatory jacking of the hand back and forth, which is just awesome. It was one of the best things I've ever seen. It was hilarious. There's that, and there's the fact that one of the chicks from The Commitments, which is a movie that every now and again you see somebody from The Commitments pop up in mainstream film. She's Dexter's nanny. The backup singer, Natalie,
from The Commitments. So the kids did get dumped back on him?
No, just his son, just his baby.
Oh, okay.
So, but the kids are gone. The kids, I don't know if they're ever bringing the kids back. I hope not.
But he has the baby for
He
some
has the baby, but you don't have to see the baby because he's got the nanny that they care. And she's hot and Irish. So anyway, okay. That's it. Everything else about the show, bad. So I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to make it all the way to the end of the season in solidarity with my peeps. And then that's it.
I'm so glad I basically ended with the
with
Trinity
Lithgow.
Killer. With Lithgow.
He's the best.
That season was terrific.
Yeah, Lithgow is to Dexter as Forrest Whitaker was to The Shield. Not that The Shield didn't end strong, it did. But it's like, in a way, it was hard to top Forrest Whitaker as yeah. John Cavanaugh because he was the best villain that show ever had. So anyway, so there you go. And that's about the size of it.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
All right, still to come, we got your top five before we wrap things up for today. Your top five songs from May 14th, 1983. Isn't that right, Don Taylor?
Indeed it is.
Let me ask you this. Did you, when you say that you because sometimes we'll just sort of, you know, randomly pick it, like we open the great book of music and, you know, we'll pick something just by sticking our finger in, or I'll have a guest, I'll say, like, pick a page number, and then I'll pick something up there. Did you actually go through and deliberately select something where you liked all the songs, or was that just happenstance that you selected it and it turned out that you liked the songs?
What I did was I actually just I kind of realized that I wanted to do something that was in the 80s. And so I knew the general section of the book that would be the 80s. So I just opened it to the 80s and then found this one page that had the last week of April and the first 3 weeks of May in 1983, and I looked at it and I said, hey, those are good songs. And then I realized that the third one on the page, I actually kind of like those top six. So I said, I'm going to go with that one.
Excellent. So we'll get to that here in just a few. Don't forget to join us tomorrow on the Rick Emerson Radio program when I misspoke earlier, I said it was Kelly Clark. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week will be in studio with us tomorrow. Also tomorrow at 3 p.m. Pacific time. You don't want to miss this. Also tomorrow, 3 p.m. Pacific time, we will be speaking. We'll be sharing a phone call with Mr. Roger Klein. Roger Klein and the Peacemakers.
Oh, nice.
Who are going to be in town playing this Friday at Barbati's.
Have you interviewed him before?
I have.
Okay.
I have.
So you won't be a gibbering fad boy then?
I may. I'm not going to rule it out or anything. We've actually interviewed him a couple times. We had him in studio once, and I think we've had him on the phone either once or twice. But I'm such a big nerd for that guy, and I always just kind of, you know, like that's always just
You're
under
awesome.
Do you ever do this where it's like you interview somebody, or you keep it together, but you know that if you just, like, at any moment, like the guy is waiting to, it's like underneath the surface, like your inner Chris Farley is just waiting to ooze out of your pores. you know, just like all over whoever the hapless interviewee is. So he's going to be at Brabati's this coming Friday night. But tomorrow, 3 p.m., that is Wednesday, 3 p.m., we'll be talking to Mr. Roger Klein from Roger Klein and the Peacemakers, a band you really ought to check out. Such things are brought to you by, among other folks, CJ's High Climbing Services. You can find out more about them at cjshighclimbing.com. That is cjshighclimbing.com or 503-228-9278. Let me just tell you this. Talking about Roger Klein reminds me of our good friend Jenny Hieronymus, and talking about Jenny Hieronymus reminds me of that latter email that she sent in about her husband, who I'm sure has many traits that are positive. There's many things at which he is skilled. Ladder usage, ordering nachos he's good at.
Yes, very good at ordering nachos.
And, you know, other things. The latter usage, not so much. And so
she seemed to do a good job of picking a wife.
That's true. No, there you go. See, that's right there. That is where, maybe at least at one point, that's where the bulk of his talent resided. So she sent this email, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, about his, I don't know, his sort of ill-advised plan for getting to the top of the roof, which really just amounted to like taking like five different ladders and like some duct tape and some bungee cords. And just like, you know, like a bucket of sticks that he found somewhere and trying to construct some sort of a device to get him onto the roof of the house, which almost certainly would have ended in his impalement and probably crippling paralysis had she not intervened. And so since she sent that email, I got to tell you, there were probably two, three, four, five different emails have come, all but one of them from wives, incidentally, about somebody, all but one of them a husband, who was trying to do exactly the same thing. So there is like some weird, it's like that hole at the top of your bathroom sink that keeps it from overflowing. There is some self-destruct mechanism, I think, built into men that women, you know, like if you haven't gotten a wife by the time you're, you know, like 35 or something, they're just going to find you, you know, like mounted on a, you know, like on a piece of bamboo in your front yard because you've tried to build a thing like, you know, you tried to build like some sort of Professor Coconut radio deal to get under the roof of your house and it all ended poorly for you. So if you are that guy or if you are married to that guy, dating that guy, maybe your dad is that guy, you know, whoever it is that that does the handiwork, maybe think it's a little bit beyond their reach, literally or figuratively. You want to contact CJ's High Climbing, have it taken care of via these guys. Maybe you got your parents, maybe mom and dad are maybe not getting around as well as they used to, but they're not really aware of that fact, as is sometimes the case. You just talk to CJ's High Climbing, and whether it's you know, having the roof cleaned off or getting that algae or the mold or the moss taken off because it can pry apart the shingles or cleaning the downspouts or the gutters or just, you know, you get like hundreds of pounds of leaves, it seems like, they just stack up on the walkway and the cement, and it doesn't look like it's slippery, but then you get that lower layer underneath that starts to rot away, and then it's like your foot comes down to the leaves and it just goes out from underneath you like it was just made out of banana peel. You don't have to deal with that. 503-228-9278. That's how you contact CJ's High Climbing. 503-228-9278 or go to CJ'sHighClimbing.com. It is CJ'sHighClimbing.com. 503-228-9278.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Pick up the time.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Don't forget to join us tomorrow. That is Wednesday, when our guests will include Aaron Mesh of Willamette Week and also Mr. Roger Klein of Roger Klein and the Peacemakers. That'll be via phone tomorrow. And then Thursday, Anna Griffin from the Oregonian and Mr. Mike Russell from the Oregonian Culture Pulp and the recent interviewer of Berkeley Breathed of Bloom County fame and so forth. It is 503-505-6964. Also, tomorrow, Monkey Watch. We'll get to that tomorrow on a whole passel of other things. It's, right, hold on, just closing all of these many sort of texts and chatty things that have opened up. All right, it's 503-505-6964. This is Don Taylor with your top five.
4, 3, 2, 1, fire!
Counting is wonderful, counting is marvelous, counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness, counting is ecstasy, I love to count, don't you?
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Today's top five, the top five songs from May 14th, 1983. That is May 14th, 1983. Don Taylor, what is your honorable mention for today?
Honorable mention is Come on Eileen, Dexy's Midnight Runners. I like this song. And it's not on my iPod or anything.
It's a long, long list, isn't it?
So is this one of those songs that...
I never need to hear this again. I can tell you that not only do I never need to hear this again, I didn't like it the first 1,000 times. This guy sounds like he's doing the worst Robert Smith impression on Earth, first of all. And plus, having seen the video for this song, they look like they smell. These guys look like they smell like a hayfield full of manure.
This song just sounds very jaunty to me. And that was it?
That's the...
okay, there you go.
Well, was that is that supposed to be the end?
Maybe I only downloaded like a ringtone length version of it. See, it's taking pity.
I was going to say, let me go see if I can find the full length version, but no. No, that's the divine hand of providence intervening on my behalf, Don. That's because I've lived an upright and virtuous lifestyle. All right. What's number five? That was awesome. This is the best top five ever. I said I hated a song, and then it just quit playing. I didn't even have to touch anything.
See if that happens again with number five.
All right. What is number five?
Thomas Dolby, She Blinded Me with Science.
Right, welcome to my podcast. I've got one last song I want.
Is this where did you get these songs from?
Is this from the
free crap I was able to find in distant corners of the internet?
Yes,
repository.
Okay. But I thought I was downloading the right songs. Okay, let's skip that one.
Really? Okay.
How am I supposed to know it's like his damn podcast? It just said it was the song.
Did you listen? Let me ask you this: if I were to ask you this question right now, did you listen to these songs beforehand? Would I regret it?
I listened to make sure they were the right songs, but I don't think I listened all the way through. I thought it was a live version. And it is indeed a live version.
All right, welcome to my podcast.
Do we know that this isn't Thomas Dolby's podcast? Is this the podcast of some guy who's a Thomas Dolby enthusiast?
It's supposed to be Thomas Dolby.
How do you feel this top five is going so far? I mean, like on the classic 1 to 7 scale.
I'd say a 2.
Okay. Do you want to continue? Would you like me to flip a coin?
No, I want to keep going. Okay. I must have success at some point.
Play through the pain. All right.
See, now this is going to be like a song I don't even actually like. Number three is the... Oh, no, I like this song. This is Minute Work, Overkill. I like this song. So hopefully this is actually it. Maybe it's a karaoke version.
I can get you sleep.
Nope, that's it.
I think about the implications.
Is it just the saxophone that wins you over?
I like his voice.
Wait a minute.
Possibly the complications.
What?
Especially
what year did this come out?
1983.
Someone stole from somebody here. Classic rock fans in the house know exactly what I'm talking about, too. This bears a striking similarity to Hold On Loosely by 38 Special. Except for that right there. which just spells a striking similarity to L.A. Law. Are these the Land Down Under guys?
Yes.
Okay. This doesn't sound like a song that would be called Overkill. Overkill sounds like it would be a much more righteous song than this. What's being killed here? Over or otherwise?
I think it has something. It's a relationship thing.
Okay.
What are you looking for there?
Oh, I see. There, he actually said it there. Okay. So the relationship is being overkilled?
I'll be honest. I like this song without actually knowing what it's actually about. I just like the way it sounds.
Which is fine. No. That's okay. As many people know, I am not much of a lyrics guy. I am lyrics to me are a very junior partner in the lyric and melody partnership of songwriting. this does sound.
What was that face?
I'm just
and
saying
the head bob and that face.
This does sound very much. This does sound very much like a thing that like a whole Applebee's full of people would get down to. Sort of moderately get down to this.
It's very white music.
Yeah, this is like as you're
It was 83.
As you're on your way to see like a new Jennifer Aniston film or something, and you're waiting for your for the Bloomin' Onion thing or whatever it is to arrive. Okay. All right. Then we have to be done with this song now. These are the top five. Wow. These are the top five songs from May 14th, 1983. Don Taylor.
Okay, this is the one I don't like.
This is the one you don't like?
Yes, this is the one I don't like.
So we're clear where the bar is
set. So you're going to really hate this one.
Awesome.
The Greg Kinn Band, Jeopardy.
Here's the thing. I don't really...
I like the Weird Al parody.
I also like the fact that Stevie Wonder didn't ever sue him for this. Here's the thing. I like the Greg Kinn Band actually quite a lot. I don't really care for this song. Greg Kinn actually wrote one of my very, very favorite songs. He wrote the breakup song, which is one of my all-time favorite pop songs. I do just hear the voice of Don Pardo, though. You're a complete loser! You don't even want a copy of our home game!
How many more people do you think know the words to the Weird Al parody than know the words to this song?
Like 1,000 times more. Occasionally there are parodies that you realize have so far outstripped the original in terms of quality or in terms of penetration into the marketplace, into the audience, that people don't even really know that it's a parody anymore. Here's a perfect example of that. You know the Cheech and Chong recording Basketball Jones?
Mm-hmm.
I will give you, I don't know how much money is in my pocket, so I won't say all the money in my pocket. Can you tell me the song and the artist that they are parodying with Basketball Jones?
I can't, and I can also tell you that I didn't even know, I think, until about a year ago that it was a parody. And that's one reason why it's not stored in my head, because I distinctly remember finding this out about a year ago and going... And realizing, even as a kid, I knew it had to be parodying something, but I didn't know what.
Because why would you write a song called Basketball Jones? Yeah. Basketball Jones is a parody of a song called Love Jones by the Brighter Side of Darkness, who are a one-hit wonder from Brooklyn, I believe. And they wore these, great, poofy pink satin suits with, no shirts underneath. They're all really tall, brooding black soul men. But then they have, these weird pink, like Barbara Eden genie outfits on. and then the front man, though, was like a 13-year-old. That was like the big, that was the other gimmick with the Brighter Side of Darkness, is that he's the one that goes, Love Jones! He was like, I don't know, sixth grade or something. That guy, by the way, still tours as that guy, singer. They don't even use the band's name because nobody
Love
would
Jones
know it.
Guy.
Yeah, he's like, singer of Love Jones! He'll turn up at your more cozy venues. Mm. But yeah, I would say that I've heard this song maybe a tenth as often as I've heard, I Lost on Jeopardy. I don't hate this song. Yeah. I heard it way too much, but, you know.
It has better guitar work in it than the previous, three songs.
I do like Greg Kinn. Well, he had terrible song titles, though, and record titles, because he had the whole thing of, like, True Kinn Fessions and, I don't know, Rock Kinn Roll. That was awful. See, that's kind of cool. You got to admit, here's the thing about this song. It's got a hook. I mean, it sticks in your head, and that's hard to do. So, good for you, Greg Kinn. All right, these are the top five songs from May 14th, 1983.
Number two, David Bowie, Let's Dance.
I have nothing to say about this song. I
loved this album, but I had been a Bowie fan, like, forever. And I loved this album, and this was an early concert experience for me, was I actually saw David Bowie in concert touring with this album. And so it was like his Thin White Duke period. And
Let me ask you this. As a David Bowie fan, let me ask you, because David Bowie is one of those guys, you know what David Bowie's like for me? He's like Bob Dylan in that... I don't know, a while back we were talking about colorblindness, and I think I am colorblind with certain artists. You know, like I look at Bob Dylan stuff and I go, okay, there's something there, and I should appreciate it, and it's obviously meaningful to many people, and he's talented. It's not that I dislike it, I have some sort of Teflon thing. I am indifferent to it. As much as I've tried to get into it, it's not even that I don't like it, it just doesn't, I have no receptor for it. I am that way with Bowie, too. Is this a good David Bowie song?
It's a decent David Bowie song. It's not one of my favorites, but it is a decent David Bowie song. I mean, it's another song, though, that, I mean, putting it into perspective, I mean, 1983 was still, in a lot of ways, the end of the 1970s. And as you can hear
from... Sounds very disco-y.
This was just past the height of disco. And Bowie always... when you think about it, he always managed to take these popular genres, and he would like take whatever was really hot in, like, say, Europe, and he would popularize it before anybody else got to it.
Right.
And he would tend to do it better than anybody would who followed him. So it's like, yeah, this is a disco song, but it's a really, really good disco song. He's also just always really theatrical and really terrific with lyrics, and also really terrific with producing his own music. Like, if you ever listen to his version of China Girl,
right,
back to back with like Iggy Pop's version, because Iggy Pop wrote it, but Bowie's version, it's almost like he took the raw materials of the song and just made it the song that it could be.
Well, this is, and you have to, you know, here's the other thing. This is, you know, for a really, I mean, he's not just, I mean, he's alabaster white, and this is a pretty, funky song for a rail thin white guy from Britain to do.
No, he's a brilliant, brilliant musician.
I wish that I could somehow appreciate Bowie more. I feel like I'm missing out on something there. And it's like I've tried, and I just can't. It just doesn't resonate with me at all. And I have always felt poorer for that. That I'm just not able to get into it for some reason. The same reason that I know I'm missing out on huge sections of, you know, of whatever by not being into Dylan. There's a lot of Dylan songs I would probably really like. I just can't quite get it. So I'm always curious about whether things like this, like big radio hits for guys like Bowie, whether they're good or not. Because, you know, sometimes it's like radio hits for a really influential artist are just, you know, they're crap.
Yeah.
The radio hits are like the dreck or whatever.
Yeah, there are certainly other songs on this album that I like a lot more than this one. But this was the single.
Excellent. These are the top five songs from May, and two of the six that played so far. So well done.
Thank you.
These are the top five songs from May 14th, 1983.
Well, fingers crossed, this is Michael Jackson, Beat It.
Hey, this is a good time to talk about this. Did you watch Oprah's interview with what is her name? What is Michael Jackson's mother's name?
Oh, I can't remember at the moment.
Whatever.
Shirley Jackson. No, wait, that's the lottery. I don't know.
I want to say Rose, but that's wrong too. Yeah. But whatever. With Michael Jackson's mom and dad, and then his kids. Did you watch it?
No.
I got to tell you. First of all, You know, if there is any justice in this world, I mean, you know, the thing about Joe Jackson is he'll probably just live forever.
Yeah.
He'll probably outlive, just like those bastards always do.
Like Cheney.
Seriously, yeah, it's like, you know.
The evil burns bright.
Yeah, if you're a good, decent, you know, upright person, it's like God gives you cancer of the ass, and then you die when you're like 40 or something. You know, but if you're a guy who just beats your kids with a chair, you just live forever. You know what I mean? She asked him, I didn't bring this soundbite in because it made me angry just watching it. And it's like, even hearing it again today would have made me angry all over again. But she presses him on the whole thing of like, you know, Michael was on the show, you know, Joe. And he said, you know, he was on the show in 1993. And he said that you beat him, that you whipped him. And he says, well, I take issue with that. And she said, well, you take issue with the accusation of beating? And he goes, oh, no, I beat them. I just didn't whip them. And so he took issue with the phrase whipping. And she said, but you beat them. And he goes, oh, yeah. And then and she said, well, with what did you beat them, dear Liza? And he says, well, with a strap. And then she tries to sort of nail him down on the whole, like, how is that not, you know.
Whipping.
Yeah, how is it not whipping? And, you know, but he just kind of kept going back to the whole thing of like, well, they've never been in trouble with the law, which, by the way, isn't strictly speaking true.
Yeah.
I think even a cursory knowledge of the last 10 years of American popular culture and the legal system would indicate that that didn't really have the desired effect, Joe. But he was just totally unrepentant about the fact that he just wailed on his kids. Anyway, it just seems like a terrible, horrible person. And then they were talking about this, how, you know, when Jackson died, his kids with Paris and Blanket and whatever they, and Prince, and they all went off to live with Jackson's mom. And there was a fascinating little moment that I wish Oprah had followed up on, because she was talking about when they pronounced Michael Jackson dead, his kids went off to live with his mom. The kids said, where are we going, Grandma? And she said, you're going to come live with me. And then Oprah said, okay. And so there were already children in the house because some of Jermaine and Randy's children already live with you. And I wanted to know what that was all about.
Yeah.
She never followed up with, like...
Well, because.
Yeah, like, yeah. Why? Like, what is it? What is the deal with them living, you know, those kids living in your house? I mean, it's probably nothing nefarious, but I wish she'd asked. But then the highlight of it, so she started with Jackson's mom, then she started with, then she talked to Joe Jackson, and then she interviewed Jackson's kids. And I got to tell you, they seem astonishingly normal. I mean, and I never thought that I would say this, because I think it was like so reflexive that we just made fun of everything Michael Jackson did. I got to tell you, I really just based, and I get that, I don't really know. I only know what I saw, you know, from them and what Oprah said about that interview in promoting it. She talked about having interviewed the kids. Based on what Oprah said and based on what I saw of the kids yesterday, I got to tell you, I think he was onto something with that whole putting them in the veil thing.
Oh, yeah.
But see, I thought it would, but I was like everybody else. I'm like, putting him in a veil? What a freak. You know, I think he was really onto something there. Because those kids, they said that they can go to the mall, they can go to the movies, they can walk around public, and they're like, nobody has any idea who we are. And I think that really has, I think that is that has paid dividends aplenty for those kids. The fact that they are not, that their faces are not known.
Yeah, let's revisit Suri Cruz in 15 years.
Yeah. So whatever else you want to say about Michael Jackson, I think that was a smart decision on his part to not have his kids' faces put all over the tabloids. And in retrospect, what I realize now, that kind of all came together for me, is that, well, of course the media painted that as being freaky because it was denying the media what they wanted, which was shots of the kids that they could then exploit for money.
Yeah.
So good for you, Michael Jackson. Well done. I mean, we kind of talked over the song here, but I mean, it's like, you've heard it, but goddamn, what a great song that is! I mean, just a fantastic piece of recording. So we'll actually play that again as we go out here today. So, well done, Don Taylor. I mean, and I didn't have to hear the
eventually.
Whole. I didn't have to hear Dexy's Midnight Runners
no,
either.
No, you didn't.
You see the video where they're just in the overalls with no pants or shirts underneath? What
see,
is that?
See, we start
Get
the
dressed.
Show. We start the show with me disappointing you and making you angry. We end the show with me doing something to make you happy.
Well, I'm just saying.
It's a carnival ride, like every relationship.
I'm a man of many moods. I have myriad facets and layers. I'm a constantly shifting kaleidoscope of creative and artistic worlds. Mm. All right. Join us tomorrow when our guests will include Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week, also from Roger Klein and the Peacemakers. Mr. Roger Klein will be calling in around 3 o'clock. And I will post a Facebook message to this effect later on. But if you've got a question or a comment for Roger Klein, something you want to know, you can email that to me. It's rick@rickemerson.com or post it on Facebook or send it via Twitter or, you know, whatever. Send it or send me a woof, as they say. And whatnot. Yes. We want to thank Mr. Aaron Duran, who is our guest today for the Week in Geek. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, where goddamn it's dark outside.
It is. Jesus. It's dark and rainy and cold.
Holy God. We will see you again tomorrow at noon for Legion of News, and then at 1 o'clock or shortly thereafter for another fine installment of this radio program, where at the news desk it is Don Taylor, Advanced Technology Magic Provider Minister Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live courtesy of a generous grant from y'all and our many fine business partners as well. So we thank you all for being out there and for supporting the Rick Emerson radio program. Spread the word, won't you please? It is Tuesday? Wednesday?
Tuesday.
How long have we been here? Seems like hours.
It's been a long, long day today.
It is Tuesday, November 9th, 2010, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. Have a good evening. We'll see you all tomorrow. Bye now.